Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
People to believe in me, and I want people to believe me when they taste my beer. That's what it's about.
You mean you laid underneath it and tried to
put his tongue up the bung?
I like to actually scoop up the yeast and look at it.
7 o'clock came real early that next morning.
Oh, yeah, man. Thanks for dumbing that down for us. You did an awesome job.
It's all about food and beer.
Punch me in the junk.
Man, that thing was thick.
The point is, just beat it like it's your dick.
I like to smell it afterwards.
Are you being sarcastic right now?
Yeah. Bring your body armor.
I ran into my junk once on a ball valve on a kettle.
That's a true happy ending.
Now, live from the Brewing Network Studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Good day, boys and girls. I'm your host, Justin Crosley. This is The Session. And we're joined today by Beardy, who made it back from the Yukon.
I did.
Alive.
Candy couldn't kill me.
She couldn't do it.
Nope.
We'll find out if she tried or not.
Oh, she tried very hard.
Teresa Pasuti is back in the studio with us today.
Hello. Always happy to be here.
It's good to see you. And everybody's made it down through the heat wave we're having here. Bevo's in the studio. And
hi.
Even the lovely Abigail is in the studio today, but she's got earmuffs on.
Smart.
Rightly so. Yeah. Today, we got a great program for you. Eight Bridges Brewing Company from Livermore, California is going to be on the show with us today. And I want to thank our sponsor, More Beer, for bringing you this session and everything that we do. You can go to morebeer.com and check it out. And go take a look at their Viking Malt. It's the best stuff on the planet. And you can get it over at morebeer.com. And thank them for being a sponsor for this long. We can't do this without them, believe me. All right, so Beardy, let's get right into it. You made it back alive.
I did.
And I think I saw a photo of you in front of the Into the Wild bus.
You told me I had to go there.
We discussed this, that some people die all the time.
We said don't go there.
Oh, I missed the don't part.
Was it photoshopped or did you make it to the bus?
I made it to a bus.
Oh.
It looked identical. It looked like the bus.
So that was the bus in the movie.
Buses are in the woods.
Okay.
The movie bus is not across a dangerous river, which we did cross one of those, just not that one.
I see.
This bus was located in a parking lot of a brewery.
That's
about
nice.
10 miles or so from the park.
Oh, that's
my
cool.
God. I was actually like about to contact the authorities.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had me snowed.
Yeah. So I did Photoshop out. They have it decorated with like some Christmas lights and some weird things,
okay.
I guess, to probably make it more obvious that it's not the real one.
And maybe so that it like looks less like death, like a death trap.
Yeah, maybe a little bit more homey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so I Photoshopped that part out.
Okay.
But I was sitting in front of a bus.
Got it.
Yeah.
That is awesome. That's too super funny.
We didn't have time to get there because it's a whole day trip basically to get to the real bus.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And you have to cross that river that made
river.
Him stuck. That's why he died. He was stuck there because of the river.
I read that he got stuck because, well, I guess he ate some seeds that made his legs not work.
Oh.
And so then he ended up not being able to get food, and he just starved.
I feel like that was a combination. I thought that he first was like, okay, well, shit, now I have to wait another season here because of the river. But then at that point, didn't know how to survive another season, ate the wrong berries, and slowly disintegrated.
It's hard to say. I don't think his journal was very detailed, other than he's just like, I'm broken, please come help.
Right.
And no one was there to read it.
The smartest person on earth.
No.
Great movie, but I think people idolize the kid a little too much.
Yeah.
He's kind of a dumbass.
I think they romanticized some ignorant youthful teenager.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and it's like you want to be able to invent the whole world and figure it all out from scratch.
Yeah.
And,
right.
I mean, just think if breweries did that. Like, what kind of bad beer you would make.
Yeah.
It'd
yeah.
be really they, sad.
It happens, by
it,
the way.
They,
it,
yeah.
I, what? I have seen it once or twice.
Yeah. They said he went in without a map, and he did document where he crossed. And if he had a map, he could have seen that less than 3/4 of a mile away from where he crossed, there was essentially a bridge.
Amazing. Amazing. I'm glad he explored his surroundings.
Exactly.
Even. Forget a map. He was there long enough to take a walk 3/4 of a mile.
He went to the one place he crossed, and he was like, well, if not here, then nowhere.
I guess it's over.
Oh. Yeah, right. Might as well go back to the bus.
Wow.
Yeah. So
can we also address the berry situation? Because... you guys were eating some berries.
Oh, yeah. Candy found some really tasty berries. Have you ever had cloud berries before?
No.
Oh, man.
These are wild?
Yes.
Did you guys have, a book for this to figure out what to eat and what not to eat? Because that's the other way this idiot died.
So Candy thought she knew what they were.
Uh-oh.
Her guess wasn't cloud berries.
Okay.
So I had one, and it tasted so good, I basically ate the whole bush.
Wow. But how were you certain it wasn't poisonous? For real?
We were... Well... My certainty was based on her certainty that it was something that it wasn't.
Oh, my God.
You're still supposing she wasn't trying to kill you? Because
right, I told
she could have stopped you.
She tried very hard. She was encouraging me. And went,
right.
Yeah, so I basically ate the whole bush.
Did she eat any of them? Because that should have been a tell-all.
Right.
She had blueberries in her hand at the time.
Wow.
I don't know. Maybe she was just putting it in her mouth and turning and spitting it out.
Yeah.
But, yeah. They were great, though.
I met some listeners in Colorado that I've met them before. They came out to our anniversary party there, the Hop Grenade.
Yeah.
And they came up to me, and I was kind of in passing, so I was confused. But they were worried about you. They were worried about you dying, right?
Yeah, they should be.
Well, and... all I remembered is that after the show, you and I talked about it, too, and I was worried about you dying by wild animal.
Yes.
And so they come up to me, and they're like, we're worried about Beardy. Like, is he alive? You know, and I'm like, and I started to say, like, oh, yeah, by the way, I'm serious. Like, I'm serious about him dying. I wanted to give him my gun. I wanted him to take my gun. It wasn't until I walked away that I realized, wait, they were talking about your wife killing you. They were talking about Candy. Because as I was walking away, I sort of heard them say, like Candy. And I was like, I must have just sounded like an insane person. That I wanted to give you my gun so that your wife didn't kill you.
You wouldn't have been okay if that's how I used it?
I mean, I would have been fine with it. But I was like, I was just thinking more practically that we were talking about you taking my pistol in case a bear or something.
Oh, right.
You know?
That's what I was assuming you meant.
And that's what I assumed that they meant too. But they were talking about Candy killing you. And I must have sounded like an axe murderer when I said how serious I was.
Oh, yeah. And you wouldn't be on my side in that scenario.
No.
Yeah,
I would have given her the gun if that was the case. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, well, so overall, no issues. And where did you go again?
We went to Denali. We spent 3 days in Denali. We hiked. We rode the bus into the park about over 30 miles. And then we walked about 6 miles from the road.
Okay.
And it was our first hour spent with carrying a backpack at all in our lives.
Ever. Okay.
And it started raining on us. Turns out my waterproof shoes that I even extra waterproofed before going on with some spray weren't waterproof.
Okay.
At all. So I was basically walking in sponges.
Ouch.
And it was great. So we ended up, because Candy was so terrified of crossing the river.
Okay. Yeah.
She wanted us to walk up through the bush. And this was like steep hills covered in plants. And it turns out in Alaska there's a ton of moss on the ground.
Oh.
But it also turns out that that's not the ground. It's just a moss layer full of holes underneath
oh.
and pools of water.
Oh, no.
So you'd be walking along, and all of a sudden, you just...
Wow.
And you'd be like down to your knee or deeper.
Wow. So it's like falling in a snowdrift, but
trap
it's
doors.
A moss drift.
Exactly. Yeah. And so she had me doing that literally on the edge of 80-foot cliffs down to the river.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
And you still think she's not trying to off you?
Oh, no. I was certain of it. But,
because she was there also.
Oh, yeah.
Like she was.
I mean, how much research did you guys do on the terrain and what you might run into?
I knew that we were going to be following a river.
Got it.
And that we would have to cross it at some point. So I had water shoes. I was ready.
Yeah.
But like I said, it rained and the river only got stronger. And so
yeah.
that's why we didn't actually get to do our original plan and walk around. We were going to hike around a mountain called Cathedral Mountain. But the river overnight rose nearly a foot.
Wow. Did you all see any other living people out there once you got off the bus?
In Denali?
Yeah.
No.
It was
we didn't see anybody for 3 days.
Yikes.
Oh. It was beautiful.
Okay.
And worth the trip.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
What about, like, mosquitoes rough. And bugs and stuff? I heard that those can be real bad out there.
I was really paranoid about that.
Yeah.
And so I got all of the layers of bug protection.
I see.
And sprayed our clothes and had bug lotion. Like, it's a pepper extract, not the DEET shit that'll kill your nerves.
Okay.
And we had no problems.
Oh.
I didn't get one bite.
Did you see, like, they were there, though? They just
avoided
you? Oh, yeah.
They were hovering around, and they just wouldn't land. So
wow.
if you
oh,
get...
Cool.
The bug spray that I got is, like, permethrin or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff works.
Okay.
You just got to spray it on beforehand.
Okay.
But, yeah, no bugs. Saw some moose. Nice. I actually got to walk... We went to an animal preserve because we didn't get to see a bear or anything in the wild.
I love that you had to, after all that, you had to go to an animal preserve.
No, but it's better to not see the bear in the wild.
I was okay with not
right.
seeing the wild. We saw tons of bear poop.
Okay.
And actually, we'd walked for over 8 hours the first day, and it was 11 at night, and the sun was going down finally at 11
wow.
there.
Wow.
Okay.
And Candy was like, I'm not walking any further. You need to find a place to put up a tent because that's going to be it.
Yeah.
So it's getting dark. I put up the tent. I walk 100 yards like you're supposed to put your food in a different spot, go back, and then we go to sleep, wake up in the morning. And we hadn't seen any sign of bear at all the first day.
Mm-hmm.
When we're on our way to go have breakfast, we find a fresh giant pile of bear poop right in between our tent and the food.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he was
so
there.
They made themselves known. But
did you have,
any.
Where do you put the food? Like, how do you keep it from getting eaten? Do you have to bring like a bear box with
yeah.
you?
Yeah.
You
it's a plastic box. And actually the park rangers at Denali will give them to you for free to
I
use
see.
In the park.
Because they don't want you to die.
Exactly.
Oh, cool.
They prefer, well, they don't want to shoot the bear if they get the taste of human.
Got it.
So
well, and
they care more about the bear.
Do you suspend them in a tree?
We didn't because
we didn't.
There weren't really any trees close by.
Oh, okay.
But you just put it in a big open place. Mm. Kind of like...
I would have suspended myself in a tree.
It would have been safer, probably.
Yeah.
Instead of laying covered in bacon like I did.
yeah.
But, yeah, so we just left it out, and you're supposed to put it 100 yards away from where you sleep, and then also 100 yards away from where you eat and cook all your meals and whatever. And
okay.
so that way the bear's not going to put two and two together of, oh, hey, there's a tent. There's going to be food down there.
Yeah.
And so if it does happen to find your food, you're okay.
It's elsewhere.
Yeah.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you made it back.
Yeah. You want to come with me again?
No.
We're going to do it again.
I don't think it's about you guys liked it, huh? You're now backpackers?
We'll see.
Yeah.
We have a lot of backpacking gear now.
Right.
I know a guy. I could get it to you real cheap.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if backpacking is my thing.
Yeah.
I don't think I can carry enough beer on my back.
That's the problem. You need to have like trail angels that will be there with your beer.
Yeah.
Like in at the end.
I've recently learned, I've always wanted to take like multi-day rafting trips. I really like rafting, but I always thought, I'm not going to go that long without drinking. But I found out there's ones that they'll lug all your stuff. Tons of beer, wine, everything. Like every night you camp, they're just make you dinner, you have all the booze, you're good to go. So I was like, oh, well, I can raft then.
You know, my friend runs a rafting company, and she was going to set up a trip. Hopefully she'll really do it this summer. It got canceled last summer.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe next summer.
Right.
We're almost
there already.
But we were going to do like a beer pair dinner rafting thing, like a multi-day trip.
I'm in.
Yes.
I love this.
This would be super cool.
I'm a rafting fan.
I met some people that actually do combo. They backpacked upriver, and they had like a small inflatable raft and then rafted back.
Okay.
And I thought that sounded like a really cool
trip. Yeah, super fun.
That's too much for me. I just want to get in the thing and let gravity, you know, take me down the river.
With your cooler of beer.
If it's somebody else dragging my cooler of beer, yeah. all right. Well, you're alive, and that's a good thing.
We made it.
Okay. We can talk more at the end of the show if we have time. I'm very fascinated by this trip.
Yes.
Let me get through some announcements today before we get to our guest, which, like I told you, is Eight Bridges Brewing Company. Announcements are brought to you today by Drake's Brewing Company. You can go to Drink Drake's, and they're about to celebrate 30 years of beer. That'll be this Saturday, I think, the 24th. So that's it. Next Saturday. So get your tickets. You can go to drinkdrakes.com, and you're going to want to check it out. They're a great brewing company, and we appreciate their support. And been around for 30 years in craft beer. That's a big deal right there. If you want to support this show, you can do your Amazon shopping by clicking on the Amazon link. That's on our homepage. And if you don't see it, it's because you have your ad blocker blocking things. You can also support us by joining the BN Army. Just click the donate button, and for as little as $2 a month, you're entered into the More Beer monthly donation giveaway, which is a chance to win $100 to spend at More Beer. We draw a name each and every month, and the more you donate, the more chances you have to win. So thank you to all of those of you who do that. It's been a great way for you to support us for all these years, and we thank you. Also, we've got a lot of shows here in the Brewing Network. Don't forget Brew Strong, Hop and Brew School, Heads and Tails, The Sour Hour. We've got something for everybody here, so share it with your friends. All right, you can get updates over on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We do fun stuff over there. For example, if you were on our social medias, you would have found out that our Pale 31 collaboration, Grenadier,
yes,
that we did with Firestone Walker just came out on Friday.
It's out.
It's out.
You seen it?
I saw pictures of it. I haven't had it yet.
Me neither.
I think we're supposed to get it here at the Hop Grenade next week.
All right.
But I know that it's been released, and you can find it in the mixed pack on the shelves. Might take another week to get to all of the markets, but I do know that it's going out nationwide.
Okay.
And you'll see the Brewing Network's Hop Grenade right there on the packaging.
Is that a 12-pack or a 24?
I don't remember. Both? I don't know. I think it's a 12.
We better at least get six at a time.
I ordered four cases for here, but it's a mixed case. So that's, if it's a 12-pack, so three in every one will be ours. Plus, I ordered kegs for here.
Okay.
I don't know that anybody else is going to get kegs. It might just be Hop Grenade that gets kegs and everybody else gets the bottles. But we're going to try them both.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we'll have them here by the next time we're on the air. I don't know. They said sometime next week. It's going to take a little while for us to get them.
Are we actually going to share the kegs? Or is it just our beer?
Oh, no, we'll put them on tap here. I got to put the kegs on tap, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Fine.
Just hang out here for a few days.
Okay, fine.
You know, yeah. All right. We have a Twitter game today, Beardy?
Of course we do.
That's great. Twitter game's brought to you today by the American Homebrewers Association. And American Homebrewers Association is a community of more than 45,000 homebrewers who share an abiding love for beer. Head over to homebrewersassociation.org for brewing resources, recipes, and a healthy dose of homebrew culture. And if you're not a member, you can click the AHA link on our homepage. It's on the left side there, and become a member, and we get a little piece of the action for that. So there you go. What's our Twitter game?
All right. So I don't know if you've noticed, but we've been doing a lot of traveling here. Bevo was just in New Orleans.
Oh, yeah.
I was in Alaska.
Yeah.
You were in the house bus in Wyoming.
That's right.
I think Teresa went camping recently.
We've been all over. Yeah.
So I think the BN needs to open up a travel agency and monetize all of our experience.
Okay. I like this idea.
I want to crowdsource an idea of what our first vacation package would be.
Okay.
Like, what would be our curated trip?
Yeah.
I think we could put together a pretty good
fun event.
This
is a legit idea.
I think we had a vacation company reach out to us asking us to do just this.
I know. I'm crowdsourcing.
So, yeah. All right. So what would the Brewing Network perfect first vacation be?
Exactly. What do you want to do with us, and where do you want to go?
There we go. All right. I like it. Very good. Okay, let's do a little bit of feedback. Feedback's brought to you today by the Beer Law Center. You can go to beerlawcenter.com. Check it out. John takes care of my trademark. He can do the same for you. Also, he can help you with all your brewery filing and more. He's a one-stop shop, and he's just a great guy, and he works a little too hard for me. Go to beerlawcenter.com. A lot of feedback about the feedback about JP.
Whoa.
A couple weeks ago, where he got bashed by one listener for the mean and terrible interview he did with who was the brewery?
It was from Utah.
It was Lynn.
Toasted Barrel.
Lynn from Toasted Barrel.
Yeah, Lynn Litchfield was the guest. Okay. And this listener wrote in a couple of weeks ago now and saying how awful and mean JP was, that he couldn't believe it. He really kind of tore him a new one.
Yeah.
So Lynn wrote in.
Oh, wow. Angry Lynn.
Oh, did JP send that to you? Good.
The guest wrote in.
That's awesome.
And he says, hey, JP, I don't know if it matters, but listening to Michael's feedback on this week's session makes me laugh. What the fuck is he talking about? Saying that you guys were shitting on me and my beers? I didn't get that at all. I almost wish you were in the other seat, actually, so you could have teased me and joked more. Mike sounds like an out-of-touch douche. I had a blast hanging out with y'all, and y'all made me feel very comfortable, even when I spilt my beer. Show this to Justin. that's probably why JP sent it. JP does a great job when he's at the helm. Fuck that other guy. Love you all and suck it. Cheers from Lynn. And then he says, maybe I should have emailed during the break that JP's a big jerk.
Yeah.
Because that's how you get messages to directly. JP. You got to email him at the break.
Yeah.
One time. I make a mistake one time.
So, yeah.
He did almost have a catastrophic beer spill.
He did.
Yeah.
I forgot about that, actually.
I did also.
Did it, mention it. But it didn't make it to
but
the board?
It was like,
no,
it was
going.
Soundboard adjacent. Oh, yikes. Yeah.
I might still be the only one to have ever done it directly on the board more
really?
Than once.
No, Scott did it once.
Okay. I think I've done it three times myself.
So. And it still works.
No. It's been replaced three times.
Oh, okay.
So did oh, really?
So
oh,
did Taylor.
Taylor got
and Blickman took it apart. He was in studio, took it apart, and cleaned it up for him.
You're kidding?
No, dead serious.
So that would have been this board too. The good, the expensive
board.
One.
It was that board.
And John took it apart, like Blickman, right here in the studio.
In studio, took it apart.
Wow.
Dried it out.
Gotta love John Blickman.
He was like, and then he was the presses.
Yeah,
I can fix
that. Guy's amazing.
Wow. Okay. All right. Here's a little bit more about that show, though. Rob writes in. Hi, guys. I felt like I wanted to write in after listening to the Humble Sea episode of the session where feedback from listener Mike kind of ripped into JP and how he allegedly treated Lynn during the Toasted Barrel episode. I just wanted to give you another perspective. At the risk of sounding like a kiss-ass, I think JP takes way too much crap from listeners. Sure, he can be an asshole. I do love that closing song, by the way. But I'm also kind of an asshole on occasion. So, in my opinion, as usual, JP did a great job hosting the episode and wasn't disrespectful in any way. I've mentioned it to Bevo when I've seen her at the BN booth at GABF. I love the dynamic that JP brings to the show. That said, my favorite episodes tend to be the ones that Justin hosts and JP co-hosts. But that's also because I love listening to Justin, especially when he has the occasional on-air meltdown. Long story short, JP does a great job and doesn't get enough props compared to the amount of shit he seems to catch. Cheers and thanks for everything you do for homebrewing and craft beer. Hope to run into you again. P.S. I'm also glad to hear Tasty's cancer is responding well to treatment. Sending positive thoughts and vibes and hope he will eventually feel well enough to rejoin some of the shows. That's from Rob. I hope to see him on some shows soon, too. I think he started treatment again this week after a week or two off. So I'll keep you up to date as I know. Crane writes in, let's see, hi BN, insert bullshit praise about how awesome you guys and gals are, then say some shit about how long I've been listening for. Now to the butt. You are growing a systemic problem with pompous, self-righteous listeners who have the audacity to write in and complain about a goddamn free show. Don't effing listen if it bothers you so much. From Crane. Okay.
Well, we just love to get hot and bothered, though.
True. And yeah. Crane, don't forget, we do encourage feedback of all kinds. And sometimes the negative stuff is the most fun.
And really, what we encourage the most is paying for the shows, then writing and complaining about it.
Yes.
Yes.
You do have that option.
Complaints with a check, that's and they're true. Always acceptable.
Yeah, that's right. Ben writes in, the douche nozzle who bashed JP from the previous show is way off. I listen to those shows back to back. Next time, break the pills in half, bro. I don't know what that is.
To the emailer.
Okay. Ian Titus writes in.
Ian Titus.
Yes, he's back.
Yes.
Here he goes. Ever been drunk and missed the last two beers in the cooler in your big mug? I had a local Pils and a Red Hook ESB. probably shit when sober, but badass when not. Sincerely, Ian Titus. Always my favorite email is from Ian.
Was he saying he had the two beers poured into the same mug?
That he did that himself, yes.
Right, so he made a custom blend.
Oh, my God.
Yes.
That's amazing. A big-ass mug.
Yeah.
That's a beer cocktail right there.
Okay.
Nate Pilsner and...
And Red Hook ESB. Sounds like a diacetyl pilsner.
Yeah.
It could be fine.
You know, sweet diacetyl pils.
One of those fast lagers.
Right. I would try it. It'd be interesting. But if you're actually asking a question, Ian, which I feel like that was a rhetorical question. Yes. No, I have never mixed the last two beers, but it's not a bad idea. It's never really crossed my mind either. I've gotten down to the last two beers and I didn't want either one of them, so I just didn't have a beer. And now you've given me another option.
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Thanks for opening new doors.
Thank you, Ian Titus. All right, Nate writes in, hello, BN. On your recommendation, I tried the Duke Cannon Shaving Cream. Fantastic. Oh. I lathered up with the stuff and did a proper shave, and wow, silky smooth and endlessly touchable. I found myself just running my fingers over it all day.
Gross.
It also seemed to work great on my face. Keep it up from Nate.
Ew.
Well done, dun, dun, dun,
dun. He puts a Duke on his cannon.
This one is more a series, although it's not formatted as such, it's more a series of bullet points and kind of questions.
Very concise. Oh, questions.
Hello, Brewcasters. Thank you for the entertainment and information over the years. First point, tell us the truth. Doc can't be on the show anymore because of a clause in the divorce agreement.
Is false. He divorced yet?
I don't think he's divorced yet, so false.
You're right.
To the subject line, which JP didn't include, so I don't know what it is. Who has not been on the session that you would like to be on? So I guess what brewer guest? He says, specifically, I am looking for a response from each and every one of you individually. This one's easy for me. And in fact, I'm going to work on it. I just have I have another thing in the works before I do it. But Ken Grossman has never been on the session.
Oh, yeah.
I have done some tiny interviews with him, like a little bit at the GABF.
Yeah.
I think he was on an episode of Bruce Strong or one of those years ago at a homebrew con.
Mm-hmm.
But he's never come in and done a full session. I've never invited him, actually, to come do a full session.
That might be the reason.
That one's easy for me. Ken Grossman, yeah. and I'll make it happen one of these days.
He's the Moby Dick to your Ahab.
Yes, yes, yes. Beardy, do you have anybody?
I'm pretty sure they haven't been on, but I'm not 100%.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to get, I think it's... Austin Beer Garden.
Austin Beer Works, maybe? Or is it...
Beer Garden's in the name.
Okay.
But great brewery in Austin, killing it with all their beers. But
never
especially
been on.
Lagers.
I don't think they've ever been on.
Yeah. I think it's Austin City Beer Garden. Austin something. I really like them. You can tell because I don't know their name.
Yeah, great brewery. I'm just doing a quick search on our website, which, by the way, anybody can do. If you're looking for a guest and not sure they've been on, there's a little search button right there. I don't see them coming up here. So
yeah, they definitely haven't been on since I've been here.
Teresa, what do you think?
Well, I think it might be a long answer because I'm not as familiar with the backlog as you guys are.
Sure.
Have you had Three Weavers on?
Yes.
Next.
Back with their, but I don't know,
this
is Alex still the brewer
minutes.
There? Back when Alex was the brewer?
She might still be.
She's still involved in some capacity.
Then yes, yes.
I'm going to have to pause that one.
Okay, that's fair.
I can do a little fact checking.
Austin Beer Garden Brewing, it's ABGB is their acronym.
Okay.
That's who we need to get on.
I write that down, Bevo. JP's not here, so he's out sick today. Bevo, can you think of any breweries?
No.
No, any people? We've had Sam Calagione on for you. We've had
on
Garrett,
the phone.
We've
like,
had
not
Garrett
in
Oliver
studio.
On for you. Not Garrett Oliver, Garrett Marrero, although Garrett Oliver's wonderful as well. And we've had everybody with an accent that you like on, I think. So
Maybe get a Logan Plant in here in person.
Another in person, because he's been on, of course, but not in person. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We should. You tell you what we should do is get Cala Joni and Jim Cook on together now that they. That would be a great interview.
That'd be a good
the two of them together.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if I'll find out if they're ever doing any events out here, because in studio would just be killer.
Oh yeah, totally.
How fun would that be?
Get them to arm wrestle.
Yeah. All right. Well, good question, Ben. And sorry, there's not more brewcasters here to help you out there. Oh, wait, he's not done yet. There's more bullet points here. I like the co-host's new format. I'm assuming he means having Teresa and Sully rotate in and out of here. So that's good. I'm still in favor of the Where Are They Now episode, he says, which would be like listeners. And I think someone wrote in, maybe Ben, a while back about, listeners that were around before a lot and brewcasters, Doc, for example.
Mm-hmm. We'd have to find him.
And then he finishes with really kind of tired. I want to make a bunch of old timer inside jokes, but I would probably mess up and go too far. So I'll stop here. Thank you, Ben. That was it.
Wow.
So he kind of fizzled out there.
That was a great concise email, Ben.
Yeah.
Thanks for the bullet points.
2:30 a.m. I'm too tired.
The last one I want to get through. This one was sent to me personally, and it's worth reading. Even though it wasn't sent to the feedback email, but Matt wrote in a little bit of a long one, but you got to let me get through it because
Matt Brennelton.
No, as a listener, Matt. I don't know. All right, he says, I've been listening to Brewing Network shows for years, starting with Brew Strong and the Jamil Show. I've been a fan of the Sour Hour and Hoppin' Brew School from the beginning as well. Additionally, as a fan of craft beer, I know that companies like AB InBev are bad for the industry, and especially bad for the small business owners trying to compete for their fair share in the industry. I've made it a point to no longer patronize breweries that sell out to AB InBev. I've always thought that the BN was more on the side of the good guys. I was able to look past the Northern Brewer ads during the time they were owned by AB InBev, as they had been longtime BN sponsors and were still being run by good people. Having said all this, I was beyond shocked when listening to Hop and Brew School this weekend and heard an advertisement for Michelob Ultra.
What?
This wasn't an ad for a former small business that was bought up by AB InBev in recent years.
No.
This was an ad for an AB InBev flagship brand that has no place on such a podcast and is extraordinarily tone deaf to the targeted audience of the BN shows.
I know my wallet has a spot for that Michelob ad money.
That is awkward.
The NFL can market to light beer drinkers who want something they can chug down while watching the game, but the BN should not. You have lost one listener today, sir.
And while
I'm sure one listener is inconsequential compared to the advertising revenue you must be getting from AB InBev, I wanted to make sure that you understand that you can lose longtime listeners like me with this type of betrayal. I will choose to listen to podcasts that better cater to homebrewers and craft beer lovers. Good day, Matt.
Hmm. Well, you know, we don't have any Michelob ads over on Heads and Tails on the Brewing Network.
Okay. So, Matt, first of all, and anybody else who heard an ad for Michelob Ultra, I have a couple of things to say about that. First,
it tastes great.
Is that I apologize that happened. Second, I have not received a penny or a dime or a fucking love note, for God's sake, from AB InBev. And third, we have not sold out in such a way. This was an accident. As some of you will have noticed, you'll be noticing ads from different people than our normal sponsors as of late, especially in our back catalog of podcasts. And that is because we teamed up with a podcast delivery company who sells ads into the shows, and we get a portion of that. So it's like having a sales force out there working for you.
Sure.
And they just do all the work, and they put some ads in there. I refused to sign up for such a thing until I found out until I was certain that I could exclude certain types of advertisements.
Oh, okay.
And that is how the program works, because podcasts are so highly targeted usually in their own niche. Obviously, ours is as well. They design the system so that you could opt out of certain categories. Now, so I opted out of alcohol.
And
I want to make some finer points on this. The first point is you couldn't subcategorize it all the way down to like macro beer. All I could do was exclude all alcohol. I did so for you and craft beer. Listeners, I'm talking to you.
Yeah, not me.
And I want to make a point about this. I did it because I thought it was the right thing to do, and any chance that a macro brewery could end up on our show bothered me, because it's not really who we are until I completely sell out, that is. So,
all or nothing, baby.
I opted out of the alcohol category for just this very reason, and I'm bringing this email up to point out that I would hope that you'd give me the benefit of the doubt. Because I think that up until this point, we here at the Brewing Network have done nothing but support craft beer and home brewing. Now, I understand you don't know this whole backstory, so I would be confused as well if all of a sudden I heard a Michelob Ultra ad. Now, I do want to thank Matt for writing in, because I wasn't aware of this, because I had opted out.
Right.
So I immediately, within 5 minutes of getting this email, contacted my podcast distributor and raised hell. And found out what the hell happened, and just something slipped through the cracks, and they couldn't even figure out what, but they immediately removed it and assured me that it would never happen again. So on one hand, I am very sorry. I don't know how many people were delivered those ads. Please do let me know if that happens again, because I need to tackle it immediately. Now, I just want to make one other point, and it kind of goes back to, like, I'm a little annoyed that we're not given the benefit of the doubt, because... As I mentioned, I have to eliminate the entire alcohol category
right.
from advertising. And the way they decide who, what, and how much advertising to deliver on our podcast is by evaluating our demographics.
Sure.
And your subject matter.
Right.
Now, who do you think the number one moneymaker would be for the Brewing Network? What category do you think that would be?
Lingerie.
Close. Alcohol. So, in other words, if I didn't have to, I wouldn't want to leave out, say,
right.
whiskey manufacturer. Let's
Absolutely
say Jameson
not.
Wanted to buy into any alcohol company, frankly, other than those owned by, I agree with you, empires like AB InBev and those that edge out the competition, the very industry that has given me a living, I would love to be able to just exclude them. But in order for me to do that, and my principles are so firmly fucking placed in this philosophy, that I'm leaving all of that other money out on the table.
Yeah.
By choosing to only support craft beer. And I just think that it's important that you all know that next time something like this comes up
yeah.
about whether the fuck or not we support craft beer, I think you ought to take a look at every fucking dollar I'm not accepting by choosing to be principled in this matter.
So did you send an email to Matt since he's not listening anymore?
I did. I wrote back. And I wasn't quite as angry at when I wrote back.
Oh, okay.
But I did explain exactly what I explained now. And I even explained, like, hey, by the way, just what I said. I hope you know I'm not just... I'm saying no to everybody's money in the category
right.
in order to stand for our principles about how important craft beer is to us as an industry.
Yeah.
So I felt it worth bringing this up, mostly because I'm afraid that a bunch of you heard that ad and didn't write in, and I wanted you to know that it's not okay, it's not acceptable, and that I went back and I made another point to make sure we're opted out, and then also just to point out that by doing that, don't be talking to me about my fucking principles in craft beer ever again, ever the fuck again, until I sell the entire company to AB InBev.
The Ashley Madison ads are intentional, and you should go there.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Adult friend finder, all about it.
Right.
I didn't say I have principles in general. Yeah. I do not.
Oh, okay.
I do not in general have principles. But this industry has been very, very good to us. I'd like to think we've been good back, and we continue to do so. And I did not approve any such ads. So I am sorry to any of those of you who heard those, and I hope you'll now go forth and just let me know if you hear them so I can let these people know that they're fucking up again. But I'm told that it won't happen again. So we'll see what happens. Rant over.
Great.
It's just one of those things that happens when you hire a distributor. I mean, that's what all those little furries think about. We're like, oh my God, what if, they shit the bed.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I did exclude other categories, too. I tried to curate as best I could things that I didn't feel, you know, fit within our segment. Like, I cut out kids. Like, kids and families was a category.
Right.
I thought that wouldn't be appropriate. They don't make these distinctions. They just want to sell ads, right?
Right.
Like by the way, they kind of blanket sell them. They look at demographics. They have an algorithm that figures out where they should go. And so I didn't want to fuck up that algorithm either. I took out, like, families. I took out kids. I think I even took out, like, education.
Right. Audible. Our listeners don't read.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you imagine, like, a Pampers advertisement?
Yeah.
It would be random.
So random.
I took out, like, fashion because I just thought it would be annoying to most of you.
Thank you.
So, but honestly, the alcohol one was really the only one that I was like, this can't happen. I know what they're going to do. They're going we're inevitably going to end up with fucking Coors Light ads on here. I know, and I can't, even though that'd be some fucking cash.
Yeah,
that's not who we are, what we do. So I just had to do it. And
smart.
It is what it is now. So send us more fucking money, okay? That's what I have to say about that.
You got to make up for it, Matt.
Yeah. Yeah. Hit that donate button. You know? Okay. I'm going to get us to a break right now, and when we come back, Eight Bridges Brewing Company is in the studio with us. So hang in there. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Session.
Hey, this is Julian Trago from Beechwood Brewing, and you are listening to The Session on the Brewing Network.
All right, welcome back to the program, and thank you for hanging out with us today. Also hanging out with us today, on the line at least, we've got Justin Beardsley from Eight Bridges Brewing Company out of Livermore, California. Welcome to the show, Justin.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going very well. Thanks for being here with us, man. Or on with us, I should say. We've got your beer in our glass as well, so thank you for sending it over. Those of you who want to come down to the Hop Grenade, at least for the next few days, although we're quite busy, so it could be gone. We've also got some Eight Bridges beer on tap that you can have, and then Justin was kind enough to send us some extra beers, too. So I appreciate all of that.
Do you think he looks like a mashup of us, since his name is a mashup
of us?
He
looks like him cross between me and you, Beardy.
Yeah. Yeah, so deadly handsome.
That would be...
Let's see if I can find it on the website.
Be amazing, right? Justin, when did Eight Bridges open up? How long you guys been around?
We opened our doors in February of 2014.
Okay.
2014. Our first actual beer fest, actually, was the Winter Brews Fest.
Nice.
Up to opening that year.
I think I remember that even. Back when we were in the winter times.
The year before that, I was pouring with Jaden Roberto from Hop Tech, just as a home brewer.
Nice. Okay. And is that your... So were you a pro brewer before you opened, or just home brew?
No, I was a paramedic before we opened.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wow.
That might come in handy as a brewery owner,
yes,
now.
Very handy.
You know?
Definitely some injuries that can occur.
Yeah.
You'll know how to handle it.
We try to avoid those. My workers' comp would prefer that.
Yeah, good call. Good call. At least sweep them under the rug. Yeah, that's what we do around here.
Dead bodies.
Are you from Livermore? Is that why you guys opened up out there?
You know, I grew up in Pleasanton. Livermore was such a welcoming city they're welcoming to wine and craft brewing as well. So it was just kind of the easiest city for us to work with.
Yeah, that makes sense. There's several wineries. I used to work out at Wente out there for several years. Actually, I built the Brewing Network's first website while working behind the bar at Wente. when it was slow, I would turn around and build a website on my laptop because my manager was super cool, and he was a beer fan, so he didn't care that I was building this beer geek website while I was on the clock.
Nice.
Yeah. All of our spent grain goes to Wente, too, for their cattle program.
Oh, that's awesome. Really? That's very cool. Yeah, and so for years, it was just a wine town, right? And how many breweries are out there now, do you know?
Open, we have three of us right now that are actually, or four of us, sorry.
Four now, okay.
Four of us that are open, with another two, I think, that are really close to being open.
Wow, that's cool. Yeah, you guys get a little beer scene out there. I know Altamont and you guys. Who are the other two that are open?
Working Man and Shadow Puppet.
Oh, obviously. Right. I know all of these people. I'm just drawing a blank over here. Okay, very cool. Yeah, that's a good little beer scene out there. Now, you were a home brewer before, and I always like it when we get, you know, I was just a home brewer before, because I just always want to know, like, how you had the confidence to, fuck it, we're going to go pro. I'm going to, you know, I don't know. What size system did you open up with?
It's scary. So we opened up with a 10-barrel brew house.
Okay.
And I was brewing at a 10-gallon, so, you know, I only went up 31 times.
Right, yeah.
You know, but I spent the better part of a couple of years shadowing brewers from other breweries, joining trade organizations, things like that. I've been in the National Brewers Association for going on 6 years now.
Okay.
Really just trying to absorb and talk to and learn from as many people as I could as to what was I going to trip over when I was making that transition.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it helps. My background is in biology and mechanical engineering, so it's like brewing in a nutshell.
Yep.
So I really just kind of had to learn the specifics, like, you know, what specifically was I going to deal with?
Sure.
In that. So in that sense, it wasn't too bad, but it's still kind of scary, you know.
Yeah.
$50 of ingredients to a couple thousand.
Right.
Don't want to mess that up too many times.
Did you have to dump out any of your first batches?
Believe it or not, it took us almost a year before we had to dump a batch.
Oh, really?
Okay. Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
You made it that far.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And it's only happened three times.
Okay.
Since we've been open. Once was due to a Belgian contamination in our yeast. And was the temperature controller froze closed, so our fermentation got up to like 90-something degrees before we caught it.
Okay.
Yikes.
That one wasn't salvageable.
And it wasn't a kvike.
Right.
Right.
It was a fun experiment to see what 001 tastes like fermenting that hot.
But. Right. A fun one, but not fun on the checkbook. Not one you wanted to have to pay for.
No. And then we had another one where we actually had a phenolic off flavor come out in one of the beers. So we just said, nope. Not even worth it. Just dump it. Start over.
Okay. Okay, well, I like that you do that, because, you know, there are brewers out there who, you know, believe it or not, there's some that won't dump a batch. They'll just figure out how to serve it. You know?
We made a Belgian pale ale this time.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we called our dirty brown.
From Russian River, and they got the call that a batch wasn't right, and he said, okay, dump it, and I asked him what it was, and it was a lot of Pliny the Elder, I think.
Okay.
Ah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, so you got to be able to make that decision, and it hurts, but it's better in the long run.
You know, and look, this happens in any business, and I think that maybe sometimes, you know, brewers, I know the purse strings can be tight, but every business has to throw some shit away every now and then, you know, go through some prototypes, I don't know what, so I think it's important that brewers not only do it, but, you know, don't beat yourself up too much, right? It just kind of happens sometimes.
Well, I think you have to, like, take a deep breath and be like, I am proud. I am, you know, we're too good for this beer.
Yeah.
We're going to let it go.
Yeah. Remember that, like, you're playing the long game, too, mm-hmm. right? So you want people to remember your good beers. And I'll tell you, I can remember some bad beers. So you don't want me to do that, right?
Nope. Yeah, that's, you know, if I put them out and I call it, you know, Twisted Red, one of my best-selling not IPA beers, and I put something out and it doesn't taste the same, people are going to notice.
Yeah,
I've heard about this thing called making a bad beer. I've just not been able to do it yet.
Oh, God.
No, you're just a little too perfect.
Yeah, Beardy.
It's a suffer that I have to deal with on my own.
Now, just back to, you were able to gain enough experience. Obviously, it's still scary because now it's your bank account, it's your new system. But obviously, I don't know if luxury is the right word. A nice thing that up and coming pro brewers or aspiring pro brewers have is they can do what you did, and that's just go spend time in breweries. It's a cool industry that people will let you do that. So it's not like you had zero experience.
And it's getting a little harder. I think a lot of people are afraid of, you know, what if that person comes and gets hurt or whatever, and then there's that whole lawsuit
sure.
that scares them. So I was lucky that I was able to find some people. Drake's was one of them. I showed up on a random Saturday that they were actually even brewing, and was able to hang out. I was there for probably 8 hours, just
nice.
Talk to a couple of different brewers that were there. So it was nice to be able to do that and find some people you could do that with.
And of course, if you care enough about your home brewing, and I assume that at some point you knew you wanted to go pro, so you probably even looked at your home brewing from a different perspective once you decided that, you can practice a lot of the things that you're going to see in the brew house. You know, yeast management and temp control and recipe development, right?
Absolutely. Well, that was one of the things. So my parents are investors
okay.
in me. In order to prove to them that I could actually do this, I actually had to brew. I had five different recipes that I had to brew on a consistent basis and brewed them the same every time. And in order to get rid of the beer, we just threw a bunch of like tasting parties on their deck.
Got it. Nice. But,
that kind of scared us. That was the Pilsner, which you guys have on tap at.
Yep.
They're the Pilsner, Golden Nectar, Twisted Red, Nottingham Brown, which we don't have out right now. A Kolsch, and then what would eventually become the Hoppy Salvation. And so of all of those recipes that were there, I actually still make all of those.
Nice.
And that was kind of fun and doing that.
Was this your parents' rule? They are the ones who said, if you can do this consistently, you know, five times each, we're all in? Is that what it was?
That was exactly it. They wanted to make sure that I wasn't just going to show up and have something different come out of the tank every time, even though it was the same ingredient.
Got it. Yeah. Hey, I like them. I think that's a good test.
Yeah.
Especially on a homebrew scale, because Tasty talks about that a lot, right? Like being able to consistently brew it. Some brewers are like, I don't have to do that. I don't like this.
It's art.
And that's fine, too. But you know what? If you want to become a pro brewer, you do have to do that.
Right. At least you have to have the ability, right? Like you can choose not to do it. I used to think those people were crazy, but then I've seen so many of them be so successful with that model. It's like, okay, you do you.
Yeah.
But I'm with you. Like, I want my Kolsch to taste the same every time.
But
and
even
if it doesn't, it's like, not good.
You're not happy, of course.
No.
Well, then, okay, even the practice of doing it, even if that's not going to be your brewery model, you're going to go, fuck it, we're just going to come out with a new beer every week.
Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
But the practice of doing, of repeating, mm-hmm. is still valuable.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Well, I am totally in agreement with Justin. It's like quality is producing the same good product over time.
Yeah.
Like it's not just doing it once. It's not like a one hit wonder, you know?
Yeah.
That's one of the smartest tests I've heard.
Approach to quality, so.
Good.
That's one of the smartest tests I've heard a potential investor give to a new brewery owner or like
yeah.
brewery entrepreneur.
I know, never mind that they're family. That's right. Just a standard good test.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I want you to brew the same beer twice, please.
Yeah.
And
at
then
least.
We'll see. Right. Yeah.
You know.
That's great.
Are they happy they're investors now?
I think that they are. They're having fun. I'm lucky. I work with them too, you know, continuously. My dad, George, does a lot of the sales planning and everything and some of the business side, and my mom runs the books. So.
Oh, that's excellent.
Oh, that's so cool. So they're actually working with you.
Yeah.
True family awesome. Biz. I like
that
it.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
We ended up meeting the Ashworth that way, too, which was fun. She came over, and that was what cemented it for him. Was
oh,
she
wow.
told him, quit doing this. Just open up.
Ah, very. By in case you don't know, Judy, ladies and gentlemen, the godmother of craft beer is what we generally call her around here. Supported craft beer before anyone knew
what
to. What do you say?
She's my beer grandma.
Yeah,
oh.
yeah, yeah.
Man.
She's an angel, and craft beer needed her before they even knew it. So that's cool. That's a good endorsement you got there, Justin. Very nice. Now, before we taste your beer, we've got some in the glass, but I wanted to bring up something else that I found in my notes for you, and that's that you don't mess around with too many ingredients. You like water, hops, yeast, and malt.
We have some here and there, but I'm kind of a purist when it comes to beer.
And
thank you.
Not just any. I bring that up too because some of the ingredients you mentioned are semi-common in craft beer now, like dextrose and corn sugar, for example. But you like to derive your fermentables almost without exception from all malt.
That's correct. Some people use dextrose because they want to lighten things up or dry them up. I prefer to do that with mash temperatures. Or just using, there's tons of really light malts out there that you won't get a ton of color from. So I figure, why put something in there that's nutrient deficient for the yeast? For me personally, I can taste a beer that's got dextrose in it. I feel like the alcohol flavor of it just isn't quite as well balanced as I would like. So, for me, I think it's for me and my taste buds and my preference and the products I like to put out. It's about doing it right. And that's not to say that we don't have some fun with ingredients. We definitely have used blood oranges. We do a Belgian Golden Strong with a blood orange caramel that I make in-house out of blood orange juice and sugar and things like that. So we do have some fun with it within certain style elements.
Okay.
But we don't, I don't use it for like warp extension or which is the technical term for getting more alcohol without using more malt.
Sure.
I would rather brew, like for us, brewing something over 9%, can't even brew a full-sized run of that because I can't fit that much malt in my mash tun. I would rather do it that way and do a 7.5-barrel batch twice than get a full 10 but use something else.
I see. You'll make exceptions with like a Belgian style, though, like if it requires candy sugar or something like that.
Got it, and we'll do that.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay.
But that's an important flavor element for those beers anyway.
What about a double IPA or something like that?
Never have used it in double IPAs or triples for that matter.
Wow. Even a triple.
You'll just double batch if you have to.
And my triple IPAs will dry. Actually, I've been able to get my triple IPAs almost a full-size batch just because we're actually able to dry them out so much. We get down to about 10.08.
Okay.
Oh, still getting down that low. Triples. Nice.
So we definitely have good quality control with our yeast and things like that in order to be able to just get it to do what we want it to do.
Yeah.
Excellent.
You got to be on top of it to do that.
And wait, you mentioned a house-made blood orange, like, what is it, like a...
It's almost a caramel, right? So there's no milk in it or butter or anything like that. Basically just a syrup we make from blood orange juice and cane sugar.
Okay.
Really thick.
Do you just kind of make like a reduction out of that?
Candy sugar. Yeah.
I see.
So we use that instead of candy sugar in our Golden Strong, and then we hit it with a bunch of blood orange zest that I hand zest off of fresh blood oranges.
Wow.
Just to do, I mean, that's kind of the fun part with being small enough, I only have to do a case or two of blood oranges instead of, 100 pounds or 200 pounds or something like that.
Sure.
Kind of
nice.
The fun part, if we were a whole lot bigger, it just wouldn't be fun or effective.
Yeah.
To do things like that. So
that also sounds delicious.
It does.
So. Good. And I only do that during blood orange season, so I ensure.
Which
that,
is like January, February time, or
harvest is in late December.
Oh, late December. Okay.
And then usually the beer will come out around our anniversary.
Mm. Nice.
I'm gonna have to keep an eye out for that one. All right, let's talk about some of the beer in our glass. We've got the first one. It looks like a sour saison you did. You're slightly strawberry?
It is. That was kind of a fun one. That was probably my tastiest mistake we've made.
Oh, boy.
Tell us about that.
We do kettle sours, and just because I like to keep the bugs out of my tanks, just in the oil kettle.
Okay.
The pH just didn't drop to where I wanted it to, so I said, the heck with it. I'll just... let it keep going until it gets to where it wants to go. When I did that, it ate up almost all of the fermentable sugars to the point where I ended up with like a 2% sour.
Wow.
Which tasted good, but wouldn't sell because nobody pays for 2% alcohol.
That's a good point.
So I said, well, okay, what do I do with this? I could throw it away, but it tastes really good. I could brew another sour that's a little bit higher in alcohol and blend them together. And I've been wanting to do a Saison, and I feel it's really important for a good Saison to have a slight sour element to them.
Mm-hmm.
So I turned around and used it as an excuse to play around with another style of beer. So brewed a almost 11% alcohol Saison with a French Saison yeast.
Wow.
And then took the two, did some test blends real quick to figure out the ratios. Didn't quite use all the sour, but used enough of it. And put that together, and it tasted really good. And then I said, you know, this would be really good with strawberries, too. So I split the batch because I had, you know, twice as much as I was planning with. And half of it went into port wine barrels, and the other half of it just went out for sale. And that's the slightly strawberry is the strawberry aged in port barrels.
Got it. Are they? Did you get the port barrels from a place there in Livermore?
Yeah, actually, there's a Bent Creek Winery. They take care of me on barrels. They call me every couple of weeks or every couple of months whenever they drain one. And,
nice.
They get a little beer. I get some nicely used port barrels. It's a fun relationship.
That's a win-win. Now, just to back up for a sec, because you said the pH didn't get to where you wanted it to, so you just let it go and see where it was going to end up. Does that mean you just let it keep sitting in the kettle until it was done, or you had to...
Fermenting in there, and it's an anaerobic fermentation to get the lactic acid out of it.
And how long did it sit there until it decided it was done?
Believe it or not, it was only another 12 hours before it chomped through everything.
Oh, interesting.
It was ripping. It had almost as much Kroisen in it as I get out of my fermenters.
Wow.
With regular yeast.
Okay.
So how do you execute your kettle sour? What do you like to use to bring to produce the lacto?
I use the Lallemand's sour pitch.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I use that one, too.
I messed around with a couple of strains. I found that the Plantarum was just the most forgiving and you know, worked reasonably fast. It's not as fast as some of them. You know, it's usually a solid 36 to 48 hours. And I've heard of other strains going a little bit quicker, but the flavors on that particular strain, I preferred.
This is a good beer. It's not just the strawberry. I think the port barrel was a really nice choice because the strawberry's subtle, as strawberry almost always is, right? It's kind of hard to get that.
Yeah, it doesn't have a whole lot of flavor. It's just really acidic.
Yeah.
Kind of after fermentation.
So then the port kind of brings in, like a white grape, you know, almost honey, but like a white grape honey type of sweetness.
Yeah.
Yeah. The French Saison gets a lot of pear flavor out of it.
So okay.
Everything kind of goes together really well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like the restrained phenol character from the Saison yeast.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely not overpowering than I think it could easily do in this beer with the delicate strawberry and port flavors.
The French version of it, too. If I did the Belgian version, it would have been probably peppercorns.
Oh, yeah.
We're up in the mid to high 80s fermentation on this. So.
Okay. Nice and warm.
So definitely. Weird walking by the fermenter and putting my hand on the manway and feeling it.
Yeah, being warm.
Yeah, and not just automatically thinking something's broken.
Yeah, not going into panic mode.
You're like, shit, the glycol again. Yeah. And then just like a little bit of oak. Not much, just a little tiny.
Little tannin.
Tan, you know. Yeah, that's a nice mix right there. How long was it in the port barrels?
It was about 4 months.
Okay.
So not a huge amount of time, just enough to pick up just a little bit. And it's one of those things, too, where I'll taste it every so often just to kind of see where it's at.
Got it.
And when it hits a point I like, then that's where we pull it.
That's the way to do it.
What did the ABV end up being with the blend?
If I remember off the top of my head, it's 5.7.
Okay. Because an 11% Saison, that's a big Saison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, making up for the two, the two.
Right.
Yeah.
It's too bad. It's not too bad because you ended up with a happy accident here. But, you know, table beer was a thing at some point in our history, right? Where it was perfectly brewed at 2.5%.
Right.
You know,
it can taste good, but it doesn't get me drunk, so I don't want to spend money on it.
Yeah. Right.
We did one. We had a local company, and there was a German guy that worked there. his family had a brewery in Germany, and they have this style called Leichtweisse, which is just a super light, like 2.5-3%, almost like a Dunkelweiss, but just super light.
Okay.
And they drink it there all the time. It's their Gatorade. It's, in fact, the brand he told me about was called Sports Friends, which means sports friends.
Interesting. I love this.
Only in Germany is the beer a sports drink.
I would much rather that than a sugary bomb Gatorade, you know?
That's how they carb load before a triathlon?
Yeah.
Just chug a bunch of beer?
Yeah. We did a pilot test with it, and people loved it. They're like, I wouldn't pay for it.
Yeah.
Just because the TV was so low. So.
Yeah, sure. We love to do a Berliner Weiss, and we haven't been able to fit it in this summer. Summer's almost gotten away from us, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's 3.3%, and then we do syrups in it. We do the Woodruff and the raspberry, and it's like, it's awesome, but yeah. It's hardly even beer. It's so light.
And do you find that people also just do the same thing where they'll say to you, yeah, I like that, but if I'm going to spend $6, I want a 7% beer or whatever?
Yeah, we don't charge a lot of money for it. Okay. It's not extremely popular, except for the people who are like, they love a sour, that'll be our like on tap sour. So
sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, the brewery folks, like, we drink it all anyway, so right. We probably drink a quarter of the beer.
Sure. Well, and like the farmhouse style, traditionally, my understanding was that it was literally like a farmhouse beer, and it was given to farmhands like in the middle of the day. It wasn't like an end of the day beer, even. It was like lunchtime beer,
because
it would have been like a 3% beer. You have a couple farmhouse. It was cheap to make. Mm-hmm. You give it to your field hands in the middle of the day, like in France, obviously, and then move on about the rest of the day because you're not hammered.
Yeah, stay hydrated.
Yeah, exactly.
It's more hydrating
than
anything.
Right.
Yeah. Anyway.
The good old days,
yeah. Okay, and then before the break, we got one more beer in our glass, too. It's your, I hope I'm going to say, is it Centade Pale Ale?
You got it.
Okay, all right. Tell us about this beer.
Super classic hopping on a pale ale, right? Just Cascade Centennial for hopping. Easy bitterness for... what would be an IPA, a touch more for what would be, it'd be like the top end of what a pale ale would be, but just super easy drinking.
Yeah.
Pretty light. We took the terminal gravity down a bit on this. I wanted to make sure that it was crisp and clean and everything for sort of the hot end of summer. So
where did that finish out at?
Let me see if I can remember this one. I think it was
10:04
about.
Wow.
Yeah, it's bone dry.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice and dry.
Which is great for those sea hops, too, because I just love them no matter what. And then I think that in a light pail like this, if those shine, which I think they do, the dryness helps for that.
Yeah, it really accentuates the grapefruit from those two sea hops.
Yeah.
It definitely tastes as advertised, Centennial and Cascade.
Yeah. Thank you for that.
In a good way.
And the aroma, and right, you know right off the bat, too, just the aroma.
Mm-hmm.
Just a nice choice. I like a good simple pale ale,
Especially when it's 100 degrees outside.
A few people are just commenting about there not being enough pale ales around on Facebook. And one of them was Mitch Steele on Facebook. And I was like, I should do one, but make it just a little hoppier because that's kind of what the market wants.
I can't wait for that style to be the in style again. I mean, it'll always happen. It happens to every one of them. It'll be back, and I can't wait.
Exactly.
And then also a light golden color. And maybe we should talk about the malt bill, too, not just the hops, if you're able to get it that dry, and it is a pretty nice light SRM.
So in order just to get it as dark as I wanted it, it's actually a lot of Munich malt and a lot of Great Western's High Collar Pale.
Okay.
And then threw some unmalted grains in there to kind of keep the body around.
Got it. Yeah, it's like in between a yellow and an amber. You know, it's not a fizzy yellow color, and it's not an amber. It's like kind of right in there somewhere.
Yeah, upper single digits, I would guess 5-7 SRM.
Okay.
Maybe.
Yeah.
It's about there. Kind of the bottom end of where, bottom to mid of where a pale ale would lie. But with the Munich, it gets a nice little orangey hue to it. That's right. Kind of the deceiving part with the SRM numbers is you can have different hues, but the same number.
Sure.
Right. Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah, and it's 4.9% is what you have listed here, too. was nice. Where's JP? He's going to miss out on, on these good beers that he...
He always misses the good shows.
Yeah, exactly.
What an asshole.
Yeah.
That beer officially does release in the tasting room on Saturday. So
oh, it's not out yet.
We're getting a preview. Sweet.
Excellent. That's this Saturday. For those of you who might be listening to the podcast a little late, that would be August 17th. And releasing in the tasting room there in Livermore. If you want information, you can go to 8bridgesbrewing.com. You can either use the word or the number 8, 8bridgesbrewing.com, and read all about them, find out how to get there, and see all the hours of the tasting room. So about how much of your beer do you sell out of the tasting room, you think, Justin?
By volume, it's about half.
About half. That's great. Good for you.
Yeah.
Nice.
Easier on your checkbook, your bank account.
And we like to connect with our customers directly. You know, it's the best way to kind of get feedback. And
sure. Okay, I'm going to take a quick break so we can get another couple beers in our glass, and then we'll learn more about 8 Bridges beer and also about the community engagement that you guys do, because I want to talk about that too. Is that cool with you, Justin?
Sounds good to me.
Excellent. We will be right back after these words.
This is Matt Reynoldson from Firestone Walker Brewing Company, and you're listening to The Session on the Brewing Network.
Yes, sir. Don't forget, you can try our Grenadier Pale Ale that we brewed with Matt and the Firestone people. If you can find it on their shelf, it's in their current mixed treasure pack. And our beer with our hop grenade right there on the label is the treasure beer. It's our Pale 31 recreation.
It is a treasure.
Which, yes, I'm excited. I haven't tried it yet, actually. I'm very excited.
I'm sure it's a treasure because they had batches to fix what we did.
Yeah,
we were
like they,
they
blended us out of it, right. Essentially, is what they did. Justin, you must have had Pale 31 in your pale ale history.
I have had a couple of those.
Yeah. Always our favorite over here. So another C-Hop beer, too, by the way. Oh, probably why. Okay. So tell me a little bit. I read in my notes that, and maybe I shouldn't do this, you're going to get bombarded, but you kind of said you hardly ever say no to a local charity in your tap room when they want to come to an event with you. Tell me about that.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, I mean, that's our biggest thing. Like, we always feel it's important to give back to the community that's helping us out. So
sure.
When it comes to local charities, we try to keep as much local as we can.
I like it.
You know, and it's, I mean, it's anything from just making sure they have something for a silent auction or something like that. Like, there's one that we do every year where we give them the ability to auction off renaming a beer after their dog for the Valley Humane Society. And that was, I mean, we had one year they called us asking if we would do two because the person who got outbid offered to match the winning bid to do another one. And it was a
nice.
Couple thousand dollars. So, I mean, it was...
Really?
Wow.
That's fabulous.
Numbers, but
that is great.
That's and we do events in the tasting room. You know, we always tell everybody, like, if you want one of the days we normally have music or something like that, if you want to pair up for that, that's going to be the best time because we are already going to have more customers.
Right.
And then if they advertise it and do everything right, they'll get more percentage of our sales plus, you know, whatever they can collect and however they want to do it is up to them, whether they do raffles or that. So we try to support as much as we can.
That's always my thing, and I like supporting local community. In fact, here in Concord, we have saved several programs. Our Spring Brews Festival now used to be Winter Brews. That money all stays local and does programs in the park right here and helps with the 4th of July parade. And almost anything having to do with music is where we get involved. But I bring... I guess what I'm getting at is we often are approached by charities as well, and the only issue I have is when they don't help themselves, they don't help us help them. So kind of like you just mentioned, Justin, like if you're already going to have a good night and then they do some promotion, they're going to do even better. And we ended up having a little stricter kind of sign-up sheet because we were just getting folks who were like, well, look at how busy the Hop Grenade is. Let's just go do an event. And then didn't do like an ounce of their own promotion, which to me, you know, didn't help even spread the word about what they do. I feel like every charity, it's not just about raising money, but it's about raising awareness of your mission.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm only bringing this up because to more to those of you who might be involved with a local charity, these things are important to help us help you. You can't just sit back and do nothing, because then I just feel like, well, shit, I'll just write you a check for $200 if that, you know, that's right. All you're going to make that night anyway. Yeah. You're not going to get any awareness out of it. Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Push them to a different day. We'll save our popular days for the charities that have a history of repping themselves a little bit better and getting the word out.
Yeah. Now, like I said, I think it's great that you do that, and we like to do it as well. I just, if you're involved in a charity and you're going to go to your local business, just help us help you, too. That's all. Help us do that. Well, that's cool that you guys do that. You have any specific ones that do really well for you guys?
Our big one, the next one that's coming up is growing and growing even more, and that's, I want to say it's August 24th, so not this Saturday, but the next Saturday. We're doing one. It's a charity out of Livermore, and they go to helping out police canines.
Oh, nice. Like retired?
When they retire or when they get injured in the line of duty, that sort of thing.
Well, that's awesome.
So we're going to have just it looks like it's going to completely take over our parking lot. Just
wow.
We're going to have a bunch of canine units and other things going on out there. So that'll be fun. And then I think one of my most favorite every year is probably our chili cook-off that we do in the first part of November. It's completely charity. Like, you don't have to pay to get in. You show up with a crock pot of, you know, your best chili, and then it's people's choice. So whoever wants to come in and taste, they have to either donate at least one can of food or throw a dollar in the jar so we can go buy more. And so we take that. They get to taste and vote. And then we crown the winner each year, which is just a repurposed Burger King crown.
Nice. yeah, that's cool.
And they get a gift card for winning it. So we do that one, and that one brings a lot of people, and it's a lot of fun. And I haven't officially weighed how much food we get, but gotta believe it's a couple hundred pounds.
Wow.
Right before Thanksgiving.
Nice.
A big time for the Alameda County Food Bank. So
that's great.
We like to do that and help out with them, and that's kind of fun to just have a place full of happy people with chili.
Have you won the chili competition?
Yeah, have you entered in one yourself?
You know, I did do the first one, but I kept myself from being able to win it because, you know, people might think it was rigged, but I have won chili cook-offs before.
Oh.
Very nice.
So you gave yourself a handicap then.
Yeah.
I felt it might be a little unfair that one of the owners, you know, won. although, who knows, but...
Yeah.
That's fair.
Well, go to, like I said before the break, too, you can go to 8bridgesbrewing.com if you're looking for information about their events and the things that we're talking about here, if you want to go attend and get involved in a chili cook-off and all that. So you can go to 8bridges.com. Okay. We got a couple stouts in our glass. And the first one, I believe, is named after you.
It is, yeah. That was, I want to say... it was Julie Nichols was in there, and I had made this stout, and I had no idea what the heck I was going to call it. You know, I was a paramedic before, so I was coming up with all sorts of really disgusting-sounding medical names.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, yeah, maybe we shouldn't call a stout meconium. So she said, well, why don't you just put an O apostrophe in front of it, and then your name's Irish, so...
Oh, Beardsley's.
That's what we did, and the first St. Patrick's Day we were open, and I had at least a half a dozen people come up and said if we quit making it, they'd stop coming.
Oh, wow. Stout fans are some of the most diehard.
Yes.
You know, IPA fans are fickle, and they just want every IPA, and it's almost everybody is an IPA fan.
Yeah.
But I have found that stout fans, I've heard that before, they'll turn on their brewery if you don't stop making it.
They're few and far between, but they are live and die by the beer.
Yeah, yeah.
We even like segment our board by like light beers, hobby beers, and dark beers.
Okay.
And if there's nothing in that dark beer category, there's definitely people that are like a little up in arms.
Yeah. And so the O'Beardsley Stout, it's in our glass. It's a great tasting stout. Was this one of your homebrew recipes that you had before the brewery too?
No, this was the first time that I just sort of whipped a recipe together, in about 20 minutes.
Okay.
And did a pilot batch of it, tasted it when it was done fermenting, but before it was even carbonated, and was like, yep, this is good. I don't want to change anything.
Yeah, I don't think you should either.
And ran with it. So, and it's an American style, so it's got, you know, it's got some chocolate malt in it, along with the black malt, just a little bit of crystal in there for some background sweetness.
Okay.
Still let it out enough so it's not super thick, and yeah, that's what it is. We have a nitro version on at the tasting room, but that doesn't go into crowlers too well. So
I bet, yeah.
Or they would have set that up.
And American hops or English hops?
English hops.
English hops, yeah.
Bittered with American, because why pay import fees on hops that are just fine for bittering?
Yeah. So, you know, it has a familiarity to it that I was kind of trying to, where have I tasted this before? Because I've not had this beer before. And it's a little like a Guinness to me, actually. But with the chocolate's just a little more pronounced. There's a little coffee that's more pronounced. But the kind of, the subtle balance to it, where it has no real harsh edges.
Yeah.
This reminds me of like a good old solid Guinness with just a little more oomph, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
To me, it's...
And that's tricky, using like roast barley versus black malt. Like roast barley's definitely got more astringency to it.
Maybe more like an export Guinness, like when we had them on the show and we just used the stronger one. Because this has a bit more body than just the Guinness draft.
Yeah.
But you're right on the money with the balance.
The balance.
It's really nice and chocolatey and coffee-like, which bumps into the American style, but... Yeah, even on a day like today where it's over 100, I could see myself drinking this beer.
It's a refreshing beer.
Yeah,
it's not cloying. It doesn't stick around,
which is great.
Yeah, it makes it like, see, I like when people are like, oh, you can never have a dark beer when it's 100. Like it's 100 degrees outside right now.
Yeah,
no, full pint of this.
Yeah,
fine,
easy.
You know, 6%. Which is even higher than it tastes like, I think. I think it tastes nice and low and mild. I guess anywhere in the five to six, you're not going to notice it anyway. But
I didn't send any double IPAs up, but you'd notice that in most of our beers. Like, they don't taste boozy even as the ABV goes up.
Okay.
With the exception of the barrel-aged stout, just because that was sitting in bourbon barrels. So pick up from that.
And that's the one we have next, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so what is this? This is a barrel-aged, like a Russian Imperial Stout?
It's a Russian Imperial. So, and it's based off of the not the first homebrew award, but the first homebrew competition I sent beer to was this recipe, unbarrel-aged, and I took Best of Show.
Oh, nice.
Nice.
Just, I kept running with it, but then thought, this would be pretty good if it had parked in the barrel for a while.
So what kind of barrel did this go into?
So this one we get from Sutherland Distilling. We get their bourbon barrels or their rye barrels.
Oh, nice.
For this one. A blend of, you know, once used by us bourbon barrels, new to us bourbon barrels, and one new to us rye barrel.
Mm. Oh, so you're even using second fill to you.
Yeah, I like that the balance is a little better. It cuts on the booziness just a little bit, but then you get more oak out of it instead of all that like whiskey flavor.
Yeah,
I mean, because when we then like I dumped them, and I got like almost 2 liters of liquor out of it. So
there
are boozy barrels
underneath there.
You didn't dump it. You just put it in a different container.
That was my bachelor party.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
There we go. Beardy knew.
Yeah.
So I was going to mention that there's a strong tannin oak flavor in these. How long did they sit in the barrels?
6 months.
6 months. Okay.
Wow.
And then
what we have is 2018, so it's already, you know, past a year old since we brewed it.
So what I'm tasting is about 6 months in the barrels and about 6 months on stainless.
Yeah.
Okay. Definitely. Yeah. And so you now on this one, and like you had just mentioned when we were talking about the other stout, this one you can taste a little bit of the booze in.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think it's pretty balanced overall.
Yeah.
And I like the mix that you did with the rye and the just regular oak. Is that or rye and bourbon, I guess?
Of rye whiskey. And
rye whiskey bourbon. And then just bourbon whiskey. Okay.
Do you have any idea how old those whiskeys are when they put them out of the barrel?
Yeah, so the rye barrel was 2 or 3 years, and I believe it was the same on the bourbon.
Because that's one thing that I'm really intrigued by is... With like the mass, the big guys
you're typically getting barrels that have had the whiskey in there a lot longer than that. Sometimes even double or triple that amount of time. And so it's going to taste differently. And so I don't know that I've had a bourbon barrel aged beer out of a young bourbon barrel.
Okay.
And so you definitely get a bit different flavors out of that.
But I wouldn't call, would you call this beer boozy? I wouldn't call it a boozy beer per se.
No, but I think the ratio of wood sugars to wood tannins is different.
I see.
Yeah. So I think I get a lot more wood tannin out of this.
Okay.
Than I would wood sugars with the bourbon being in there longer.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah, but the other thing too is like the Jack Daniel's barrels versus and some of the other larger producers, the oaks there, you know, they want to keep those barrels, the barrel cost down, so the oaks are a little thinner, and the barrels that we get from Sutherland are just so much thicker and so much high quality and a little bit better control on the charring and everything. So
okay.
Definitely a more consistent barrel.
Yeah, it's a good beer. And then, you know, it's showing its age in just the right way. I feel like some of the, it might have been, I'd be curious what it tasted like 6 months or a year ago, right when it was made. That maybe it had some sharper edges that's now kind of settling into itself. Sorry?
Previous years. I said I do have a library of previous years, so I may just have to come up there and do a tasting with you guys.
Yeah. Oh, this is an annual release.
There we go.
That's very cool. Yeah, it's, I've always found like spirit barrels, you know, it, points when you taste them, it's beer and it's barrel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's beer and it's barrel. And they are totally not together. And it's really weird.
Yeah.
I mean, like, in my mind, like, what is the magic that happens?
Right.
You know, it's going to be a lifetime of trying to figure that out.
And it's probably going to change every time, too.
Based on the barrel. Yeah. It's different. You know, you were talking about this. These are relatively young bourbon barrels. Like, we have a distiller in town, and we got barrels from him, and his bourbon barrel age Russian Imperial Stout we did versus Heaven Hill barrels, like totally different beers.
Wow.
And I know on the spirit side, go ahead.
The temperature in the barrel room makes a huge difference too.
Yes.
Temperature
and humidity. And I know
how the shift affects the whiskey, and it does it to the beer too.
Yeah.
And that's not because fermentation is happening. Is that because of how the beer, the liquid sort of goes in and out of the barrel?
Yeah, that's it exactly. It's the pores in the wood opening and closing, so the beer is kind of moving in and out.
And so if you have...
down it goes out.
So if you have seasons wherever these are being stored, right, where the temperature in your warehouse or brewery actually changes, that's different than having a consistent temperature where the beer might not move in and out of the pores.
Right. It's like a winery where they're just trying to keep those barrels at the same temperature the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
The whiskey is still cycles.
Got it.
And I know some of the smaller whiskey guys actually only sample and bottle during a couple of the seasons of the year, because during the rest of the time, the barrels don't taste their best.
Oh.
And so they'll only either, I forget which one it is, I think it's typically they'll do it in the summertime, because when it's cooler and the wood closes up and things just change. And so they'll only package during a specific, or they'll only remove spirit out of the barrel at a specific range of months.
They don't want to go throwing away a barrel that might be perfectly good because it just wasn't at its peak.
Right, exactly.
Okay. That's interesting.
So I've never heard of a brewery doing that, but maybe they should consider it.
Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting to know if you watched
Right.
You know, I think brewers often are like, well, it didn't taste good this month, but it did taste good a few months later. But maybe aren't marking the, wait, is it, do they always taste better in June
exactly.
or whatever?
Yeah. See if it's a seasonal thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, notes. That's what I always say.
Mm-hmm.
If you make a mistake, write it down because it might taste good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the info you possibly can.
Yeah. If you don't take good notes, you can't see patterns.
Well, do you use nails in your barrels, Benny nails, to do sampling?
For samples, no. I just will pull the bung and pull a sample from the top.
So I'm only mentioning this because it's kind of changed our lives at the brewery right now. Because we have a fair amount of barrels going, and we got some of those stainless steel nails, Benny Truluzzo nails, and... It's amazing because then it's so easy to taste all the beers. It's
trouble-free. Yeah. I really recommend it.
And there was, like, no magic to it, right? You just nail a nail in. And
you can do it to barrels that are already full. You just
pre-drill.
You just drill, and then you put the nail.
Oh, you do have to pre-drill?
You can crack a stave if you just pound a nail in.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm glad you guys definitely said that, because I always just assume you just nail that sucker in.
No, that dry wood, you got to pre-drill, make some room.
No, my barrel guy is Adam. He's in heaven. He's just like, hey, come with me. We're going to taste all the beer.
Did he not believe you? Was he skeptical at first when you came back and said, listen, we're going to try this nail thing?
No, I'm pretty sure he found out about it. And he was like, we need to do this. And I was like, okay, make it happen.
Yeah, yeah.
Make it so.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a cool way to go.
I would be doing that.
Sorry?
If I had more barrels, that I was having to sample on a given day, like, I would definitely do that method.
Well, we only have like maybe 20 barrels right now. Mm-hmm. So still
makes life easy. Yeah.
Still have to proselytize a little bit.
Sure.
That's all.
Yeah. I think in every business, but I think anytime something changes your life, like in a brewer's world,
yeah,
you got to share that info. Even if it's something that everyone's heard of, but they didn't really switch to it yet. I'll do that too, where I'm like a late bloomer and I'm like, listen, I know you've heard about this before, but I'm telling you, I also was a late bloomer, and it changed my world.
10 years later, it changed my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
I walked into a brewery and saw they were using a piece of Unistrut to hold all their tri-clamps, and I looked at it, and I'm like, how did I not think of this before?
Yeah.
What is...
You know, everything
Unistrut? I don't know what that is.
So, like, that would be like the metal brackets you put on walls to hold like conduit and water pipes and things on the wall.
Oh, okay.
Ah.
U-shaped with a, it just fits all the little brackets and pipe straps on them.
Yeah. So you can, like, if you go to a brand new brewery, usually, like Vinny's brewery, you were there.
Uh huh.
All of that wiring that's running through his entire brewery is on
the spine,
on the Unistrut.
The spine is,
got it. Okay.
Unistrut.
Yeah.
Yes.
And by the way, they use it in broadcast studios too. Now that radio stations are clusters and you have like 6 studios in one building, Unistrut going to all of them. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Many uses that stuff.
Yeah. And now that we're thinking of things that are just in a brewery and changing your life, I recorded a couple Brew Strong episodes today with Jamil. Jamil's back on the show. And he mentioned something he likes to call the critical brick. And now he likes to go around and ask brewers, what's your critical brick? And they always look at him like he's crazy until he explains it. And then they all go, oh, yeah, yeah. I'll tell you, critical brick is like he's found that every brewery has like either a brick or a piece of wire or a hook or a piece of tape that like... It has one function, like whether it's holding this one hose that has no other way that it could be held, or holding something up or holding something down. And it's like no other device that you can buy off the shelf will do the thing that this thing does in your brewery.
Yeah.
And he's found that every brewery has a critical brick, this random piece of something that they can't brew without it. It holds something together.
Yep. Everyone's got one.
Yeah, I found that he was doing a top 10 list of brewing equipment that he can't live without, and his number 11 was the critical brick. Whatever that is, everybody, it's different for each of you.
Yeah,
homebrewers, I'll have them too.
Totally.
Like, mine was duct tape on a, that always caught fire.
The duct tape caught fire. That's a hot fire.
Yeah, I'm good at things like that.
Some kind, clamps when I was homebrewing, just to hold hoses in place or something like that.
Yeah, he was even talking, like a binder clamp. He would say he's been to a brewery that had a binder clamp. He's been to another one that just had a piece of baling wire. He literally got the name by a brewery that had this brick, and the brick was just the right weight and just the right shape to do whatever its function was. I think it was probably holding a hose somewhere, and that's where he even got the name from, but... anyway, I thought that was... I think every brewer, if they think about it, they're like, oh, yeah, yeah. I've got that thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, broom handle with, like, a screw on the end.
Yeah.
Of the different, like, things that we have, it's hard to pinpoint it to one, like, could I not live without it?
Right. You've got a few.
And Justin, I'm sure you can jive with this opinion, but, like, when you start the brewery, it's like anything you could implement before the doors were opened... Like, the possibilities, they weren't endless, but there was a lot of possibilities. And all of a sudden, you open the doors, and it's like, oh, yeah, we were going to do this one thing. But then now we make beer, and we have to keep making beer.
Yeah. And now you need it.
Yeah. Do you have any of those things that were like you would have loved to implement them, but now like it's just you're just too dang busy to do it?
Sloped floors in my fermentation.
Oh,
sloped floors.
It's not
those are cool,
but you got to ski everything up, and you know we're pretty quick at it. But
yeah,
I do. I would really love the ability just to like spray things down and not have to worry about it.
Right,
man.
Yeah, Mike.
That's my claim to fame. That's my only claim to fame.
Honestly, is that you got sloped floors?
I have some severely sloped floors.
Oh, yeah.
Although it makes driving the forklift really interesting.
Oh, my seven.
They can be too sloped.
Yeah, I mean, you might have some really good things going, but I do have sloped floors. Mm-hmm. So
I think
now I feel like I'm just bragging.
Well,
sorry, Justin.
No, you're good. I was going to say, I think there's been more than one brewer in here, and Vinny, I'm sure, was one of them, who I might have asked, hey, what's your one piece of advice if you're opening a brewery? And I think more than one of them have said, floors.
Right.
Like,
floors
just do the floor.
Yeah. Yep.
And almost anything else, you'll figure it out. But yeah. You can't. Once you're there, you can't fuck with those floors.
Yeah.
And my critical brick for the brewery was a hook to pull the drain covers.
Ah, there you go.
Oh.
Because for some reason, those drain covers had the thickest rubber grommet to hold them down. So there was no way by hand you could reach down in there and pull it up. It
right. And there's no tool that they make for it, so you
exactly.
had to have a, yeah.
I had to get a specific, as thick of a metal rod as I could, and then just bend it myself into
right.
a J.
Critical
so
brick.
So then I could just pry up on those things hard enough. Yeah.
Well, and even, you know, even if it was accessible, it's still like when you need to do it, it's when your brewery is under 4 feet of sludge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's not in a sunny day, you know.
Yeah.
It's when shit has gone wrong.
You don't have time to order one.
Right.
Justin, I believe in you. One day you're going to have sloped floors.
I hope so.
Or at least be able to hire somebody who can just squeegee that stuff for you.
Yeah, you.
My dad and I did all the construction in the place. We had some friends help us with the demo. And
oh, nice.
Oh, nice.
For the electrical. So, yeah, no, I'm definitely looking forward to just paying somebody to do it.
Yeah. All right, Justin. Well, thank you so much for being on the show and sharing your beer with us, man. I appreciate it. Folks, like I said, you can go to 8bridgesbrewing.com and learn more about the beers, what's on tap in the tasting room, different news and events, everything that they do there. And go give Justin and his family, the whole family-owned brewery, some love out there in Livermore, California. Thanks again, Justin. I appreciate you so much.
Of course. Have a good one.
Okay. You too. Take care.
Thanks, Justin.
Bye-bye.
There you go. Justin Beardsley.
Great last name.
Yeah. And a nice guy making some good stout for sure. Enjoying these beers. Still got my Russian Imperial here going.
And two of my favorite hops in that pale ale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a solid pale ale.
I'm a centennial fanatic.
Good stuff. All right. Well, before we go to the break, don't forget about Beersmith, the Beersmith brewing software. You can go to beersmith.com and check it out. And Brad Smith over there just does a great job. He's got a podcast as well where he does a really good job. Video podcast, too. And the Beersmith brewing software, you get your free 21-day trial, as always. So if you haven't taken my word for it yet, you should do that. Go check it out. It's not going to cost you anything. You're going to love it, and you're going to then buy the software. So just be warned. Go to beersmith.com and check it out. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we've got a little bit of beer news to do. I found some interesting stuff in the beer news today.
Oh, boy.
And we'll find out the winner of our Twitter game, which is to invent a BN vacation for us, right?
There are some great ideas. I want to go on them already.
Okay. Hang in there. It's the session. We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
tuned into this session.
Because life's too short to listen to crappy radio.
All right, welcome back to the show. Thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks to Eight Bridges Brewing Company for being on the program, too, and sending us their beer. It was a good time. It was fun.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, have you tried the new Spark Ale from 21st Amendment yet, Beardy?
Yes, Sully brought it into the studio, remember?
That's right. The Sparkling Rosé is 21st Amendment's new favorite, and it's essentially a hybrid between a cider and a beer. And they brew it with apple cider juice and grain-based sugar. Then they back-sweeten it with peach, cranberry, and cherry juice. It's not really a cider, but it sure tastes like one. It's going to be the perfect beer for summer and beyond, and it's gluten-reduced with less than 10 parts per million of gluten. For those who are looking for a good alternative to big malty beers, it's 5.5%, zero IBUs, and it's called Spark Ale from the 21st Amendment. Go check it out.
Yeah, if you have a yacht, mandatory drinking.
Absolutely. I agree with that. All right. Before we do the Twitter game results, I found a couple of interesting things in the beer news world today that I thought I would bring up.
Oh. Things are still happening in the beer world?
You know, every now and then.
Okay.
I check the beer news pretty often. It used to be that stuff was, you could always find cool stuff happening, like fun, interesting. And now it's a little boring.
It does seem like things slowed down.
You know?
Yeah, there was some drama a few months ago, I remember. Hopefully there'll be some more drama.
I know. It's good for us.
Yeah,
there's
your
more drama.
Yeah.
As long as it's not my drama, it's somebody else's drama, I'm good.
Right, yeah. That's how we feel, too, really.
Yeah.
Or at least if it's going to be our drama, it better be goddamn entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'll go through some pain and drama for you folks at home.
I can laugh along with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
Y'all, those of you who are longtime beer fans, or if you're from Utah, you know about the beer called Polygamy Porter.
The name rings a bell.
Yeah, it's been around.
Yeah.
It's from Wasatch Brewing Company.
Okay, yep.
Wasatch, whatever, in Utah. Well, anyway, despite its best efforts, the Utah brewery was not able to convince North Carolina to allow their... This article calls it their polygamy-themed beer to be sold in the state.
Wow.
I don't really like the description that it's polygamy-themed.
I mean,
how can a beer even be polygamy-themed?
Yeah.
It's half the title.
There's no beer celebration of polygamy.
Like, polygamy-titled? Okay. But polygamy-themed, like, actually infers that there's something going on behind the beer.
Yeah.
Like, maybe at the brewery, you know, that this beer represents.
You have to be a polygamist to possess the beer.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's the case. I think it's, in my opinion, very funny, tongue-in-cheek reference to their home state's history that used to allow polygamy, to be honest.
Yeah.
So they made a beer, I think, out of... it's been around for years, since we've been doing the show, called Polygamy Porter. But anyhow, it is being sold in 20 other states, but it was rejected by North Carolina because... Polygamy is illegal.
Because they don't want those polygamous ideas to infiltrate the state?
I guess. The only statement they really gave... Well, they gave two statements. One is that it was rejected because polygamy was illegal. And then in July, the North Carolina ABC board sent a statement to this news agency that said, the NCABC always gives thoughtful consideration to each label and uses the criteria outlined in the statutes as the basis for every rejection or approval. They claim that according to their statutes, representing something illegal is undignified and in bad taste.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. I mean, that's fair.
Wasatch filed an appeal, hoping to argue their case and bring the beer to the state. They said that we'll do our best to make this available for those folks out in North Carolina, and they'll get to enjoy all the fantastic polygamy porter that we're making here in Utah. But they lost that appeal. They said we were optimistic it was going to go in our favor. Obviously, the commission went against us. We're a bit disappointed. We did want to have this beer out there and available.
So they couldn't even, they can't even sell it legally because they can't register the name?
Because they can't register the name, correct.
Oh, wow.
Because the name represent, according to the quote here, representing something illegal. See, actually,
but it's legal in the state that it's made.
It's not.
It's not.
No. It used to be. They stopped that several years ago.
I shudder to think what's going to happen to sister wife Saison.
Yeah. No, it is no longer illegal in Utah.
Oh.
But interesting. I just want to dissect the quote a little bit from the North Carolina ABC. The North Carolina ABC always gives thoughtful consideration to each label and uses the criteria outlined in the statutes as the basis for every rejection or approval. They then don't go on to cite a statute. They just go on to say representing something illegal is undignified and in bad taste. And
I thought that was a part of the statute.
Why, you know what? If I wish I had read this earlier, I would have gotten John from the Beer Law Center on with us because he is familiar with North Carolina beer law. And I would have found out if is there some statute that says any name that is represents something illegal is undignified. And I would just find that odd to be in the law. Undignified, yeah. And in bad taste.
I can't help but hear.
I definitely call bullshit.
I can't help but hear the word undignified pronounced with a southern accent.
Yeah, right? It's every time it happens?
Every time you say it. That's undignified.
I was just going to say the same thing. Absolutely.
Bank. I'm pretty sure bank robber Belgian Golden Strong could make it through.
See, that's illegal, right?
Yeah.
But bank robbery is dignified? Yeah. The Wasatch Brewery website describes Polygamy Porter as a smooth, chocolate, easy-drinking brown porter that's more than a little bit naughty.
Well, that kind of adds the theme.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I'm telling you, the undignified and in bad taste part bothers me. I think it's a tongue-in-cheek. It's a funny name.
I think I think that's my next beer name is Undignified.
Yes.
Undignified in what?
And in bad taste.
In bad taste.
Well, we're talking about two states that are a little ashamed of their history. So,
shouldn't be judging the other one.
Right, yeah. Maybe they're trying to sweep everything under the rug.
They ought to team up on this and see if they can help each other out.
Okay.
Judgy McJudgerson, North Carolina.
Yeah. I just think it's
there is never going to be a North Carolina AF.
Also, not only do I think it's a funny name, and it has really been around for a long time, this beer. It's a good beer. I've had it. I think there's a little, like, it's a little ballsy, a little chutzpah of the Wasatch Brewery to do it in the beginning.
Like, in their home state, yeah.
And you go, you know what? We're going to make fun of ourselves here. We're from Utah. We're proud to be from Utah. And we're going to make fun of the fact that we were a polygamy state. Yeah.
If the Utah ABC or whatever their board is approved it, I feel like everybody else should just rubber stamp it. They're like, well, if they're okay with it.
You know what? I hadn't even thought about that.
Like, who are we to say? More conservative than Utah?
If anyone was going to say no, it should have been Utah.
Yeah.
It's sold in 20 other states. So North Carolina, I don't know where your standards lie, but...
We do. We know.
Watch out, narwhal.
Yeah. Okay. I found this article, at least the headline, to be interesting. Actually, I found the whole thing to be interesting, but it grabbed my attention. I was like, well, God, is this going to be one that's good for the air or not? And
so you were reading it.
The headline is, just how full of white dudes is craft beer? So they went right...
Like, white dudes is an ingredient in craft beer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to point out that the white dude ratio tonight is 50-50. Here in the studio.
In the studio? Oh,
once
you're
again,
right.
We have gender parity.
Yeah.
In fact, and you if know you count Abigail...
Actually, if you count Abby.
Oh, we're outnumbered
we
now.
Are
and you know
women.
What? We are never going to hear that in our feedback.
Nope.
No one's ever going to go, oh, the Brewing Network celebrates diversity.
Yeah.
No. All they're going to say is, well, yeah, but you don't let Teresa talk enough or
baloney.
Whatever it's going to be.
Yeah.
Baloney.
Get Abby a mic. Let's go.
Yeah.
No, it's cool.
She's like, no, I'm taking a nap.
She's come fine. On. She's actually laying on the floor.
I know. I was like, she must be on the floor.
Well, they went for the attention grabbing headline, but you know what? The content's pretty good. And as it turns out, the Brewers Association, of course, the trade group that represents craft beer, hired its first diversity ambassador, PhD, Dr. Nicole Jackson Beckham. And she was tasked with speaking on best practices for diversifying both customer bases and staff and listening to current challenges in this area. Now, I want to point out the article kind of starts out a little strange to me because, well, here we go. The article starts out, it's one of the most tired cliches out there, that brewers are white, bearded dudes with pot bellies who wear flannel and turn their noses up at your regular beer.
I resent a few of those.
Beardy is totally not wearing flannel.
And also, right. They wear cargo pants or cargo shorts, not flannel.
I would have gone with cargo shorts as well.
Flannel shirts. I don't own a pair of cargo shorts.
The author says the latter point is definitely not true, that they turn up their noses at regular beer. And I think that's accurate. They don't do, sure. Brewers don't do that. But the rest of the cartoon, the dude, the beard, the unbearable whiteness of being, she says, like most cliches, there's more than a grain of truth in it. Craft brewers are overwhelmingly white dudes. And now we have the numbers to prove it. So, essentially, the Brewers Association, as I mentioned, hired a PhD, joined the diversity committee, and they wanted to do a survey to find out what kind of diversity there was in craft beer. Their chief economist, Bart Watson, the Brewers Association's chief economist, Bart Watson, said that you can't really measure future change unless you know where you are to begin with. So they set out to conduct a survey and figure out what our benchmark is, where we are now. And, you know, the findings were interesting, if not unsurprising.
Both?
Beardy.
Yes.
On a percentage scale.
Okay.
What would you say the percentage of Brewers Association member breweries reported employing a woman with the job title of brewer? About what percent you think female brewers, just they said the job. This is apparently how the question was posed, so they didn't have to be a head brewer or an assistant brewer. It was just member of breweries who reported employing a woman with the job title of brewer.
I would guess, 11%.
A little high. I already went over this off air with the Teresa. She doesn't get to play along. 7.5% of member breweries reported employing a woman with the job title brewer. Though, women were more represented among non-brewing staff.
Sure.
37% of breweries reported employing a woman in a non-production, i.e. brewing, non-service, i.e. taproom servers, position.
Yeah.
So, administrative, marketing,
sales,
you name it, sales, sure.
Things, yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely would have guessed higher for those positions.
Because it seems like it's changing, right? And I might have guessed higher too. Teresa, were you surprised at the 7.5% number at all?
Or is not really, because I'm even thinking of the people I know in Sacramento, and it's probably around. That's probably par for the course, and even in Sacramento,
I think just that area, maybe about 7%. Yeah. Your head brewer is female as well, right? Is your title brewmaster? Is that
so?
What you have?
I'm the brewmaster. Yeah. I have a head woman head brewer.
Yeah.
Happens to be the youngest head brewer in the Sacramento area.
Ah.
Her name is Alyssa. She's amazing. And then we have three other gentlemen who work in the brewery. So I realize we just disrupted our 50-50 split. But, I embrace diversity, but I feel like I've never hired for specifically for diversity's sake.
Yeah.
You know, Alyssa is just someone who I tried to hire, and then she went to work for a bigger brewery, and then it kind of went sideways, and she was looking for a place to come, and I was like, you know, now we're ready. We're ready to have a head brewer. This is like perfect timing. So, she's just a fantastic individual, but I still feel like the future is bright. You know, I'm tapped into the pink boots. I, you know, read through their Facebook group, and there's always someone who's like, you wouldn't believe what happened in the brewery, and there'll be this like total disaster of like misogynistic behavior, or somebody is like limiting the motivation of females in the brewery and all this stuff. And I'm like, I'm so glad that our brewery isn't like that. And I have good hopes for the future.
Yep.
I think the tide is turning and it's gonna change.
At Loma, it was 50% male and female.
On the brew team?
Yeah.
Because it was you and one other?
Yes, right.
Female brewer.
It was easy to get to 50%.
Yeah.
And you hired that other brewer.
Yes.
And I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, like Teresa, you didn't hire her for diversity. You hired her for, she was the right person for the job at the time? Or you hired her for diversity?
No.
Or you were hitting on her?
It had nothing to do with diversity. She wanted, on the marketing sales side in the beer industry, wanted to get into production, was a home brewer. And because Jamel was so nice to me years back, I was like, I need to pay this forward now and bring someone into the fold. And she just killed it. So,
Nice. Yeah. Okay.
Now she's running the place.
Now, even though, and I'll go through a little bit more of the study here, too. Even though the Brewers Association is sort of trying to find out what our baseline here is and then see if they can develop like best practices to encourage diversity, I'm going to guess that most workplace experiences are going to be like you both described, and that the people aren't going to go necessarily out of their way to hire an unqualified female or an unqualified black brewer. It might be nice if all things are equal and you're looking to have a little more diversity in your workforce. You might then pick based on those things, but I think mostly you're just going to pick a qualified person.
I also didn't have to place an ad at all. She actually offered a management position and turned it down to get into the brewery.
Got it. So you're
so
not an equal
job ad.
So you weren't an equal opportunity employer.
Well, I was actually a no opportunity employer until I hired her.
I'm fairly certain that's illegal.
You were like, I'm making this opportunity for you.
I'm just going to amend this podcast and say that Beardy actually did post an ad somewhere for at least 5 minutes.
Sure. I forgot about that.
Yeah. Totally.
Pretty sure it's required.
I applied.
Really?
He said no.
Right.
He's like, you're not good enough.
I offered that for them to hire me twice, but they said no.
What else is here? The numbers on racial diversity in the industry are even less encouraging, says the author of this article. Just 1% of craft brewery owners are black, and just 4% of craft brewery employees are black. Other minority groups are slightly better represented, but not by much. A full 88% of craft brewery owners are white. So, there you go. That's about all of the statistics. I'm sure there was more, but that's about all that there was in this article. I wanted to point out something that Teresa and I talked about before the show, and that is that our observation, of course we didn't conduct a study here, but our observation about beer events is that diversity is doing much, much better than maybe in the workplace of craft beer.
Oh, amongst consumers? Yeah.
Yeah.
Huge.
Not only do I see it at the Hop Grenade, which I can look out the window right now, but certainly at our beer festivals that we hold, larger ones I've been to. Good Lord, the Great American Beer Festival is pretty goddamn diverse if I've ever seen one.
Yeah.
I think we bring that up because we're encouraged by that. Because that wasn't always the case. Not since I've been in this industry, by the way. That really wasn't always the case either. And I think that changing, and then hopefully it just continues to sort of change in the workplace.
And that's how it starts.
You know,
it'll transition from consumers. I mean, just like how it did with craft beer back in the 90s. People got a taste for it, then started making it on their own.
Well, and the consumers see those women and people of color and participating in the industry, and they connect and they say, oh, you know, I love craft beer so much and I want to get into it. And I see you do this, so it's going to be okay. I mean, if I had this like reason in my life, like a cause celeb, like that that was my calling. Like my calling is to like tell women that beer is okay for you, and you don't have to drink chick beers, and you don't have to be in a certain box, and like you don't have to keep yourself out of making beer, and like you can do all those things. Like that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
That's the whole reason.
And I'm here to tell bearded white guys that beer is okay for you to drink.
Yeah.
Because we need you. Right, yeah. We really need you.
But nobody could be quite as bearded as you. So,
yeah,
you know.
You got to set an example.
Got to set a goal. Beard goals.
Well, again, not only on this program right now tonight are we more than 50% diversified and,
yeah,
and non-white males, but one-third of our session shows done in the month of July had black brewers on them.
Wow.
Yeah.
I was kind of surprised by the 80%.
It's really because one out of our three shows had a black guest.
Right.
But, yeah, but,
it's,
like,
but the statistic is still true.
Hey,
one-third of sessions.
Yes.
The ratio in that on that evening of white people in the studio versus black people in the studio.
Oh, that's true,
swung
too.
In the other direction also.
Well, and that was...
No one's ever going to give us credit.
And it
no.
was so fun. Just, I mean, even just the family aspect and yeah. like the...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one is awesome. Ever going to give us credit for it. We'll just no. always be the misogynist... Dick Joke Beer Network.
Full of white people.
Full of white people. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, but they had to change it from white men to white people.
Yeah.
Just for
and
us.
I,
just for
and me, right. I,
yeah. We're changing things.
Anyone yeah. who knows me well knows that I only spit take for dick jokes. So there you go.
There we go. Perfect.
Teresa will do just fine.
Yeah. She's going to keep doing just fine on this program.
I'm just trying to fit in. No, I'm not. That's for real.
Okay. That's all I have in the beer news for you, and thank you all for participating in that. Okay, but we do have a Twitter game today.
We do.
What was our Twitter game, Beardy?
It was looking crowdsourcing trip ideas for the new BN travel agency that we're going to be starting.
Okay. So what did we get? Did we get some good ones here?
Oh, man. I think we're going to have to go test these out.
So we got good ones. All right,
yeah.
All right.
Let's see. We should be arranging. Okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. We have Seabass. He says, easy. Nationwide strip club tour in the RV, complete with inexplicable fire, running with the law, and Justin and JP fist fight.
There we go.
Oh, my God. I can't wait. That's so awesome.
Diversity out the window all around. Already. It took 35 seconds for us to talk about objectifying women in a strip club. And all I am all for it, by
hey,
the way.
It wasn't us. It was Seabass.
Yeah. I mean, I can't believe this.
Jumbo strip club in L.A. I cannot.
There we go.
Can't believe it took somebody not in that room to come up with an idea of a strip club tour in the RV.
Yeah, this is a fantastic idea. By the way. Yeah,
right.
This might actually, whether you win or not, this might just happen.
I mean,
does the winner get their idea?
Do they get to do it?
Yeah, that would be a great prize.
I do have a stack of $2 bills burning a hole in my top drawer.
You're the
good
worst.
Brewer of Seville says, the trip begins riding bitch on the back of Dave Marliov's bike as he takes you to Alaska for a hiking trip with Warren, culminating in a cross-country trip with Justin in the BN bunker.
Wow.
Better yet, just say fuck it and stay at home.
Oh, that's a great one.
Yeah, much safer.
Yeah. You have less chance of catching some leg disease. There.
That is a dangerous trip, I just want to say right now. That is a high... You got to take out life insurance before going on that trip.
If your wife is also looking to get rid of you, try this package we have.
Yeah.
Let's see. What's It Face says, boner chicken on a private island in the Bahamas.
Man, we haven't had a good game of boner chicken in a long time.
Oh, my God. I forgot about that.
We're getting older, Justin.
Do I still have harder. That song on here? I wonder if I ever programmed that into there. No, I got to get that back. I got to go find
it. The new studio?
No. That means we haven't played that in years.
No, it's been years.
Okay. Great song. That was a really good one. Okay, go on.
Yeah. Let's see. Joshua says, finally go on the Adam and Eve tour.
Oh, yeah.
That would be a great one.
Isn't that in North Carolina?
Oh, right. Can we go there?
Yes.
I don't think we're allowed.
Oh, to, like, tour the factory?
Tour, yeah, the warehouse.
The warehouse, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't think that's as fun as you think it would be.
I agree with that. I've seen the warehouse from the outside. It looks like a warehouse.
I bet it's like going to Amazon.
Yeah, just robots, you know, moving dildos around into boxes.
Boner fulfillment center.
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Yeah. In the town of Boner, North Carolina.
Play Boner Chicken in the Adam and Eve warehouse.
Yeah. There's got to be a city in America somewhere called Boner, right?
Oh, there has to be.
I'm looking it up now.
Thank you. I'm just like accidentally. Okay, what else?
And then lastly, Joe says, Alaska to retrieve Beardy's body when his wife finally kills him.
Aww.
Because oddly enough, she wants to go back to Alaska. I'm not sure why. Because we saw and did the things there.
So what, when you say you're going backpacking again, she just wants to go straight back there for it, not to another place.
She's okay with another place, but okay. She'd be fine just going right back there.
Wow. Yeah, because she didn't offer you yet.
Right. You know. She had some practice.
Yeah.
She's going to perfect it next time.
She did. I mean, you're a wily little fucker. God, I mean, she got you 6 miles out off a road.
Oh, back
you know.
Me into a corner. Look out.
She fed you berries. She did everything.
Yeah, mystery berries. Had me walking on a cliff.
Oh, my God. I still can't believe you ate the berries.
She was very confident that they were edible.
After the conversation where I told you she's killing you, of course she's confident.
Oh my God!
No, these are she does that thing where like it looks like you're eating them, but you throw them past your mouth. She's like, they're so good.
Yeah, and she did all
and
that.
Just stares at you for. Did you find it weird that as you were eating, she just stared at you for an hour?
She's like, you only ate five.
Are you,
you need
okay?
To eat six. You need to eat at least six.
How are you feeling? Are you tired from your walk?
Are your toes tingling?
Are you sleepy?
She's looking for hives. Where's the hives? Right, yeah. Hives?
She kept pulling my sleeves up.
She got a stethoscope out. What are you doing? Nothing. Yeah. Just practicing for nursing school.
You're not sweating as much as I thought you'd be right now.
No, bleeding from the ears or the eyes.
Yeah. She's like reading under her breath. Sweating, bleeding from the gum. I don't see any of these.
Vomiting, diarrhea, no.
He ate the wrong berries.
And she's like, I'm not feeling so well. I think I got this wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Did you find a town in America called Boner, Beva? I'm just
okay,
curious.
There's not a town that I found called Boner, but there is a whole list of lewd sounding names per state.
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
I think Pennsylvania has a few.
Pennsylvania has one called Intercourse.
It looks like
Rhode Island has one called Swallow Hill.
Swallow Hill.
Oh, that's not Rhode Island. That might be Virginia.
There's
I don't
no
know.
Hills in Rhode Island.
There's one called Hooker in Oklahoma.
Yeah, that was a name, though. That was like a last name.
Three-way in Arizona.
Three-way.
Three-way.
Is that one word or two?
Oh, yeah.
Two.
Okay. In Arizona.
Yeah.
Established 2018. Like, right. Some of these, they can't be that old.
Dick Shooter in Idaho.
Dick Shooter.
No.
One word or two? One word or two. That also could have been someone's name.
Dick Shooter
is
one word.
Okay, that's not
someone's name.
Yeah, Richard Shooter.
Oh, but there is, where is this? I think is there a South Dakota? There is South Dakota.
Yeah.
The names aren't here, so I'm just doing this by sight. Sorry.
Okay.
Boner Steel is a thing.
Boner Steel.
Wow.
One word or two?
One word.
Okay.
Boner steal.
Boner steal, like I'm stealing a boner right now, or like stealing.
I feel like it's like a boner of steel.
This boner's so hard, yeah.
I didn't even think of that. More of how are you going to steal a boner?
Oh, no, I thought steel hard boner.
I didn't even know.
Yeah.
I didn't think about that. Probably because I've never had one. I don't know what that is.
I kind of want to move to Dick Shooter just so I can have that be my address.
Yeah.
If
and
I
find
a
pen pal
and also Felchville.
Feltville?
Felchville.
Yeah.
Felch?
Does Dick Shooter have a craft brewery yet? Because
ooh.
Dick Shooter Craft Brewery is also.
Dick Shooter Brewing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You heard about the new brewery in Sacramento area. I think it's Elk Grove. It's called Hungry Pecker.
No.
Come on.
Swear to God.
No.
And you know that's going to be like something else, but it's like, okay, even if it means something else, really, though? Is that what you want to call your brewery? Or they're going to be like, no, it means you have it right. Hungry Pecker.
I think we have it right.
You do?
Isn't that the same area where they had that Special Ed Brewing?
Yeah.
Is it the same guy?
What? Yeah.
And the logo was a short bus.
Short bus. Oh, my God. That poor guy.
There is a beer.
He's like,
there's a beer called Dick Shooter.
There is.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Okay, well, we have five finalists in our Brewing Network Dream Vacation.
Yeah.
Strip club tour in the bunker, I assume, in the RV.
I mean, to me, the bunker part is the worst part of that trip.
Although I feel like if we were going to do a strip club tour, it should be in my piece of shit RV. Like, it fits.
But we need to make money on this. Do you think we'll make money if we only sell tickets?
Seven. They're very expensive. Or we make them buy all the strippers and beer, and then we don't really make money, but we don't lose it either.
I mean, yeah.
You know. Okay. The next one was riding bitch on Dave Marley of Vu Vu's bike on the way to Alaska. And then getting in the bunker somewhere.
Yes.
Basically, right? The most dangerous trip ever. Where did the bunker go? Home?
You just go in a cross-country trip back from Alaska.
Got it. Okay. That was number two. Number three was boner chicken on a private island in the Bahamas. I assume that would have to be a tournament style, not just one match.
Are we talking single elimination?
It's just, what was that big fight, the Thunder Down Under, like big Muhammad Ali fight or whatever? It's just like one giant match.
Oh, man.
With the two best boner chicken contestants on earth.
You will be eliminated immediately if there's a Thunder Down Under.
The Adam and Eve tour. Finally take that Adam and Eve warehouse tour. And finally, what was the Alaska one?
Oh, to retrieve my body when Candy finally kills me.
That's right. A trip to Alaska to retrieve Beardy's body when Candy finally kills him. I don't know what to eliminate. I'm going to eliminate the Adam and Eve tour. I think we all agree there's nothing. That's not going to be that fun.
Yeah. Okay. It'll be a fun afternoon. It's not a trip.
I like the commentary. I like the submission.
Yes.
But not a good...
We need to flesh that one out.
Yeah.
Literally.
Stop it.
You know, a boner chicken tournament doesn't last that long. It's every contest is pretty quick.
Yeah, but you'd be in the Bahamas.
Right, but you're also in the Bahamas.
On a special island, right?
Private island.
Private.
Do you have to be naked on this private island?
Yeah, because then I have to sunscreen all over. That's a whole thing.
Do you guys want to keep it in?
Or I mean, I do like the Bahamas part.
All right, we're going to take out boner chicken.
That doesn't appeal to our new 50% demographic of women, I don't think, also.
Right. Yeah, we don't want to go and just spectate.
Oh, I do.
Oh, you do?
I'm just going to point and laugh.
I don't know.
Yeah. That's what I'm good at.
That's punishment enough.
Yeah, that's
being
ridiculous.
Shamed by Bevo.
Yeah. Yeah, Bevo shaming is a new thing. It's not us shaming Bevo. You know,
right,
listeners, you must realize that Bevo shaming is actually what she does to us.
Oh, yes, absolutely, exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
It happens off mic, and it's very scarring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's so much judgment, you have no idea.
All right, that leaves us three to vote on. Okay, so before you vote, just to recap, strip club tour in the bunker, the most dangerous vacation ever where you ride bitch on Dave's bike to Alaska and then get in the bunker, go somewhere, and then finally going to Alaska to retrieve Beardy's body after Candy kills him.
I would appreciate that.
We're going to start at the bottom. Raise your hand if it's going to Alaska to retrieve Beardy's body as our... Yeah.
I mean, I don't.
It's not a very fun vacation.
I don't want to go on that trip.
I mean, I also just feel like if Candy works that hard, like, just let nature have him.
Let sleeping Beardy's lie.
Exactly. We'd make it back up there.
Give him back to the earth.
Just be a pile of bones.
It's great to know you guys care.
Give him back to the earth.
I don't want to carry your bloated, smelly body anywhere.
You would wait that long? You wouldn't go looking for me immediately?
We'll cut off your beard and bring that home and...
But we'll just spread
instead of your ashes, we'll spread your beard at sea.
It's probably the only thing that won't be eaten. You know what I would hope? And I mean this from the bottom of my heart.
When I die.
Because there are so many wild animals, there would be absolutely nothing left of you except a perfectly shaped beard on the ground. Like everything else, like it was eaten or disintegrated, but your hair, your head of hair and your beard was all just laying on the ground like it's a face, but with no face.
And then a little bird would like make a nest in the beard.
Oh, I love it.
And there'd be little baby chicks.
So cute, Beardy.
In the beard. Well.
I mean, I would like to think that my beard might command a little bit of respect out in the animal kingdom, so maybe it could happen.
I don't know.
It would be more confusion than respect.
Okay, yeah. No, hey, confusion works.
So nobody wants that one as much fun as it would be to find you that way. Okay. Riding bitch on Dave's bike to Alaska and then the bunker. No votes, which means strip club
unanimous.
Tour.
Unanimous.
Unanimous. I think I see Abigail's hand up back there somewhere. Everybody thinks that's the best. That is obviously the most fitting first BN vacation.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I think we would easily sell out.
Yeah. It makes all the sense in the world.
Yeah. So we're offering dates starting in February.
We could just do like a caravan of motorhomes.
Yep.
Yeah.
That way we can get more tickets.
I've got one. We could fit in a couple more there.
I'm working on
getting one.
Oh, see, there we go.
Yeah.
I have motor FOMO.
Motor FOMO.
Motor FOMO.
Motor FOMO.
It's better than motorboto. I also feel like if we have a caravan of RVs, we can only go to strip clubs where we can park them all in the parking lot. So that people can tell how white trash it's about to be.
Yeah.
I feel like that's going to affect our experience quality.
Yeah.
Exactly. In a
good way.
Well. You should start at the strip club like on the way to Yosemite that you pass. That's like open, but it already has its own like trailer parks on either side of it. You know what I'm talking about.
Of course,
I'm gonna find out.
Yeah,
I'm worried that it might not still be there, but there used
to
be
out?
One. I'm just about to ask.
Damn.
Oh no,
there's one north of Chico. Remember that we went by after going through Sierra Nevada?
Did we go in it?
No, we just kind of honked and were like, hey.
Okay.
And it was in a wide open space.
Oh, but it might have gone down in the fires?
That's what I'm wondering.
Why didn't we fucking fundraise for that shit? I would have raised some money for that.
Isn't that what FEMA's for?
Yeah. Bring back the strippers.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. This one might. I like this trip. I feel like we won't even invite it. We might do this and not invite anybody because we just like being around each other and strip clubs.
So
Teresa's in.
How do you word this email to the company that actually reached out to us?
So listen.
Looking for an idea.
So we polled our listeners.
This is what they wanted.
I'll give them all. I was like, Boner Chicken was a close runner up.
Yeah.
But we ended up at strip club tour.
Yeah.
They're
but
gonna be like,
low airfare, keep prices down.
That's right. They're never going to respond. All right, that's going to do it for us today. Next week on the program, we've got the Long Beach Beer Lab in the studio, I think, hanging out with us.
In the studio.
Coming up in a couple weeks, I'm really excited. We've got an all-new New Zealand hop farm flying out here to do the show with us. And we're going to find out about they're developing the largest hop farm in the entire country. They're brand new. They're smart folks. I've been talking to brewers about them too, actually. And people are like, oh yeah, we've been there. We've seen their facilities. We've seen what they're doing. This is going to be a big deal. So we've got them. They're called Hop Revolution. And they are intending to do just that. Like, we all know that there are some hops in New Zealand, but they are looking to like revolutionize what's happening, and they're coming out here to hang out with us and do our show.
And that's in 2 weeks?
That's in 2 weeks. Next week we got Long Beach Beer Lab, and then Hop Revolution the Monday after that. So, good stuff coming up.
Yeah.
Do you have the bullshit we do at the end, or am I just getting out?
I don't have that pulled up.
No worries. All right, everybody. Thank you for hanging out with us. Teresa, always great to see you.
Always good to be here.
Well, so I don't even know who's here next week. You or Sully.
I'm going to arm wrestle Sully.
Okay.
I'm going to go down there and arm wrestle him and figure out who's going to be here.
You can play Boner Chicken.
I bet. My money's on Teresa.
I'll get my strap on.
Lady Boners count, too. You know?
That's a thing?
That's a thing. All right, everybody. Thank you for hanging out with us. Thank you to 8 Bridges Brewing Company, Justin Beardsley, for hanging out with us today and sharing his beer. Go to 8bridgesbrewing.com and check it out. And we will see you next week right here on the Brewing Network. Justin's a nice guy and winning.